This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, hey, welcome to Weekend Confirmed. A little more subdued at the beginning here. My name is Garnet Lee. Very glad to have you joining us today. Just a threesome today. My power co-host rocking his Captain America t-shirt is Jeff Cannata, as always.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
And we have Marcus Beer here today. How do we, are you, in, you know, Invisible Walls? What else do you like to rep for?
Well, Annoyed Gamers.
Annoyed Gamer.
That's my show, so that's what I do. But yeah, I'm back. Hello.
Good to have you here. So, big week since last we were with you. Of course, has been weighing very heavy on all of us, the passing of Giant Bomb's Ryan Davis. And we want to remember him. Obviously, if you haven't had a chance yet, you should really listen. Well, I mean, I guess it's hard. It's a very difficult Bombcast to listen to.
Incredibly,
exceedingly difficult.
I mean, it hits the heights of humor and then almost the depths of despair at some point.
So honestly, I'd really like to start off by just having obviously Ryan did a lot of things, but he was a big podcaster, and so I'd like to just kind of give him a moment of silence. Ryan, you will be very sorely missed, sir. Very, very sorely missed. I don't know that it's really our place to say too much about it, given that, you know, obviously the Giant Bomb guys were there with him and very close friends. I just, you know, I've had the pleasure of knowing the man for several years. He was part of what, you know, Andrew Pfister, in talking about it on Facebook, had a right way of putting it, this Second Street fraternity that arose. And for those of you unfamiliar, at the heyday, some might say, or the golden era of games media in the last generation, there was us at Mission and Second Street, and there was a GameSpot office. It was right up the street, and there was this little place called Steph's. You probably heard about it. It's near legendary, that we all used to go to quite a bit, and there was a sort of fraternity that built up there. But, you know, since that time, even though, you know, I've had the pleasure of working and being around Ryan quite a few times, and I would just say that, you know, for me, he embodied everything that is awesome about getting to work in this business. And he was at once this amazing guy who could, you know, in 1 minute clown you and in the very next minute school you. And I think that is really what made him such a, you know, he's always, anytime he came up, you just knew you were going to be happy. He made you happy as soon as he was there. And yeah, it might have started with him wiping a sweaty hand down the side of your face. I admit, he never did slap me, but he did do the, he always did the wipey thing
to
me.
It was the sweaty paw. I mean, this hand the size of a ham. And it would, but it was, you know, it became,
and then you'd turn around and grab him and hug him.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I don't feel right going further than that. I just wanted to say that I really, really miss the guy, and he was something else.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard the news, I was blown away. Because, I mean, when we first met, I was a UB, wasn't I?
Yep.
And that was 2000.
For those of you who don't know, Beer used to be on the PR side of the fence.
Yeah. Well, I'd moved from Red Storm in North Carolina to Ubisoft, and that was 2001, 2002.
I didn't know you were Red Storm before that.
Yeah, I was product manager. I saw Ghost Recon through from naming inception all the way to ship.
Whoa.
But yeah, I mean, I would come up and see you guys, and, you know, he'd be there. And I remember at one point he had this blonde explosion of hair
the,
on his head.
The pre-beard days.
Yeah, pre-beard. He looked so young. But yeah, I mean, there was this definite fraternity of just this area. Because, I mean, Ubisoft was, what, third in Townsend. And, you know, coming up to see you guys and seeing Ziff and all those guys, it was literally just a 20-minute walk tops. And then it's like, all right, let's go to the pub. Because that's what we did. But, yeah, I mean, I go into... On Annoyed Gamer this weekend, I actually sit down with Jeremy Hoffman, who also did some work with him at G4 and obviously worked with him over the years at Game Trailers. And we just spent 15 minutes. It was supposed to be like 5 minutes. And we just spent 15 minutes reminiscing about the guy. And just it's testament to him that we can find all this stuff to talk about. And it brings a smile to our face. And it's not the selective memory of trying to honor somebody who's passed. I generally don't know anybody in the industry who's ever had a bad word about that guy. I don't think that person exists.
I've genuinely known very few people who could have such a positive effect just by entering the room.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I didn't know him as well as you guys, but I think it's always a good thing to remind yourself to, you know, tell the people in your life that you care about them and to be good to your fellow man, because, you know, we never know when these things can happen. And it's a very sad thing. I checked in with my loved ones and my family when I heard the news, and yeah.
It is a really good reminder. I think Ryan, you know what? We're going to be positive. I think Ryan would very, very much want us to be upbeat and not being selective. He'd be like, get it together. He's like, go have a good time, because he was all about living life to the fullest. And that's kind of an awesome, awesome thing to remember.
Maybe we should take a little break and then come back and do the regular show.
Yeah. You think we should just like take a break and start over?
Yeah, well, not to start all over, but, you know, I think separate this from the rest of the cast and...
I think that would be actually a really good idea, Jeff. That's very respectful. All right, so we will take a little break. By the way, the music break today, if you haven't, you probably listened already up on Spotify. Ryan did a lot of playlists, and they were all awesome. They were all really fun.
Summer Jams.
And yeah, Summer Jams is the one we've all been, you know, the realest. Dude, the realest Summer Jams. We've all been remembering the realest Summer Jams. So I just kind of, I don't know, I perused them and I hit on one to drop into the show today. So that'll be the music break later as a remembrance. But right now we'll take a little break. We'll come back and we'll refire the Weekend Confirmed and do it in honor of Ryan. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service for 30 days. One you might want to consider is Doctor Who, The Stone Rose by Jacqueline Rayner. While a doctor searches for a missing boy, Rose befriends a girl who claims to know the future, a girl whose predictions are surprisingly accurate. But then the doctor stumbles on the hideous truth behind the statue of Rose, and Rose herself learns that you have to be very careful what you wish for. Narrated by David Tennant, who played the 10th Doctor, and he does all of the voices throughout the book, including both himself and Rose, as was played by Billy Piper in the acclaimed hit series from BBC Television. That's Doctor Who The Stone Rose, available on Audible.com, and go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed for your free trial. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
All right. Wait a minute. You're telling me you got to do Doctor Who and I had to do that fluffy thing a couple of weeks ago with the bunny book about bunny people? Everybody made fun of Jeff because he had to read the bunny book. What does Garnet get to read? Freaking Doctor Who. Awesome Doctor Who book. Come on.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He knew I was coming on the show.
I know.
He has to pander to me somehow.
Actually, cool. What happened is that this time the Audible folks sent us like
options.
Hey, would you like to pick a book? And I went and looked.
And last time, Garnet was like, yes, I'd like to pick the one about the furries. And
wait,
have Jeff read
it. Wait till you see what you get next time, Buster.
50 Shades of Grey.
Anyway, so yeah, we're ready to start the show back off again. Weekend Confirmed. Happy summer. Feels like the summer is here for sure, especially with that Steam sale.
Breaking Steam.
Holy cow. The store lasted all of like 3 minutes yesterday. This thing kicks off and it's like, oh my God, did you see? Your Twitter feed lights up. And then the next thing you see on your Twitter feed is Steam store support. Top men are on it. top men.
It's awesome though, man. There's so many good things up in there, up in there.
That's a summer jam as well.
It's strange that, you know, I mean, Microsoft and Sony haven't sort of like really got the grasp of tapping into what Steam does, because Steam sales are fantastic. I mean, I on average spend about $50 every Steam sale.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll get like...
That's the low end, man.
Yeah, but all the stuff I pick up is stuff that I first played like 8 or 9 years ago, mm-hmm. and has been repurposed. And yeah, that's why my hard drive is slowly filling up. I mean, at the last Steam sale, I picked up Civ 4 and all the expansion packs, and I picked up all the GTA games and, you know...
Although, dude, I have to say, for the old stuff like you're talking about, I kind of prefer good old games.
Mm. Good old games are DRM-free, awesome.
And then like they go through a lot of work getting that old stuff working again.
I spend more money on good old games than I do on Steam, because I generally only buy Steam games at the sale.
See, Steam for me is like the current up to 2 years ago window. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then it sort of drifts down.
I just like having my menu on Steam with, you know, all grayed out, and then be like, oh, I'll play that. And then you can just download it again, play it a little while, and delete it. It's nice.
So obviously they have a really great working relationship with publishers, because, you know, I'm sure, and well, I guess you were over on the PR side before Steam really hit big, right?
Yeah, back in the olden days.
Because we've heard anecdotally, or at least I've heard anecdotally from publisher reps that, you know, that while those numbers look kind of crazy for those sale prices, that once a game has drifted into what they call catalog territory, and catalog just means that it's no longer a new release, it means that it's part of the publisher's back catalog, that once it's in that space, which means that they've accrued enough funds that they've paid off most of the cost, they're really just sort of at that point making money, that the volume of sales they can do by having these tremendous sales on Steam nets them so much money on these titles that they've already paid off. So yeah, you wouldn't get it on new release, obviously. You won't get it on stuff that's like really current. But once it's, if it's something that's sold a good amount and it's paid off, like the freaking Skyrim sale.
Yeah.
Like, oh, by the way, here's the crazy awesome everything Skyrim for $35.
I also like looking at the most, you know, the list, the most popular downloads right now. And this morning it was like the Half-Life 2 Complete Edition.
Yep.
It's like, really? That's the most popular download right now?
Are there still people who need to buy that?
But the thing is that there are generations of people coming through who are now getting laptops for the first time. And those people, you know, you're going into college, you probably didn't play Half-Life 2 the first time
around. It's a whole new group of people waiting for Episode 3 to come out.
Screw Episode 3, just go straight to Half-Life 3.
Well, we know that's going to happen, but I was making a funny.
Yeah, it wasn't very funny. I'm so pissed off, I'm still waiting for Half-Life 3.
But no, I hear it's going to have a Duke Nukem cameo in it.
My point being, don't give up your day job, dude. My point being that, you know, the laptops can, you know, you put Steam on a laptop nowadays and it can run Half-Life 2 really well. It can run all these older games. But I am totally with you. Steam rocks, but good old games. Love what those guys do.
Well, and the thing is that Steam has built a business over a long period of time, and they have competition. Because, of course, the natural thing to talk about from here is the change in Xbox One, because everyone says, not everyone, there was that big battle line that was drawn about like, well, are you really going to be happy that Microsoft went back? Because, you know, Steam is what they wanted to do with Xbox One, and you would have had this if you hadn't gotten angry at the internet.
Yeah, and to those people I say, can I swear on your show, by the way?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course. This is an M show.
To those people I say, go fuck yourselves with a rather large cactus.
Why?
Because they're just annoying little assholes.
Yeah, but why do you say that? I mean, do you think...
Because I don't trust Microsoft of the last 2 or 3 years to deliver what Steam has done. And Steam, yeah, I mean, yes, Steam is, you know, you don't get a refund, or if you have to fight for a refund, but it is a digital copy that you can't really trade, but they have the gifting in place. You can, you know, gray out Steam and go offline and go play your game. And,
yep,
you know, you can do all this stuff. Microsoft's problem, and I've said this so many times, is that they waded in with this level of arrogance that almost like, we're a school teacher and I'm going to tell your son, this is what's good for you. This is what you need to do. You need to go always online. You need to forget about this DRM stuff. You listen to me now because I'm your uncle. I'm your daddy.
Well, you're not wrong about the arrogance, but that doesn't prove your point about the cynicism. Like, you're cynical about Microsoft You don't want to trust them, which it's fine. You can choose to trust them or not trust them. I'm not saying I do trust them. I'm just saying that doesn't prove your point about the fact that they weren't going to get to that place. I'm not saying they were, but it doesn't prove your point.
I've had the last 2 years of major cynicism about everything Microsoft's done. Up until about 2 years ago, you know, I'd gone through three Xboxes, 360s rather. I loved the first party games they were doing. Everything was ticking along. They were at the forefront. They were doing everything right that Sony was doing bad. And then 2 years ago, once Kinect came out, it became less about, and you know, this is me, you know, old hippie gamer, if you want to call me that. It became less about the games, all about the money, all about hitting that casual, that mid-core, if you will, the moms, the dads, the just set dances.
Well, blame Nintendo for that. Nintendo came in and made boatloads of money, and everybody wanted to follow.
Well, I haven't really loved anything Nintendo's done in a very long time.
I think there is a cynical view of what Microsoft did that could still lead them to Steam, and that is Steam makes boatloads of money, and they want to make boatloads of money, and so following the Steam model isn't outside the realm of possibility.
Look, I've said this ever since they, you know, they did the 180 on one, if you will. There is a time and a place for us to go to this digital model and this always on connectivity and no DRM. And that time is coming. I just don't think right now it was the, and this is PR hat on as well as, you know, gaming nerd hat. They communicated it wrong. It wasn't the right time. This is something they should have put Xbox One out there with, you know, as it is in its current iteration with, you know, yeah, this patch, you don't have to connect every day, and then gradually change it in while communicating all the positives about it. And because that's what they didn't do. I mean, their communications have been abysmal, like I said, for 2 years.
They bungled it.
Yeah, no, we got all that. I think that fundamentally, for those of you who are listening and thought, wow, the Steam argument sounds like exactly what I was saying. If you're pounding the table, like, that's exactly what I was saying about Xbox One. The reality is that Xbox One is a closed ecosystem, whereas Steam faces competition for PC sales. There are a number of outlets from which you can get your PC games, even if some of them, a goodly number of them, require activation on Steam to function. You still have other alternatives of where to make your purchase, number one. And number two, Steam has built a trust relationship with the audience over a long period of time, which was kind of born from the fact that when Steam came out, everybody fucking hated it, actually. It was bloated. It didn't work well. It had memory leaks all over the place. And they've, by taking that product from that point up to where Steam is today, built a relationship with everybody out there who is the Steam audience. And I feel like, for whatever, you know, better or worse, there's a lot of us who don't trust Microsoft in the same way. There's a lot of us who I guess maybe you look at things like the Red Ring situation, which, by the way, they stood up and handled pretty well after, but it felt like
it took them a long time.
Right, and you know, like, you had to hold their feet to the fire in order to get them to do something.
I was sitting in my living room playing Last of Us, and I had a realization dawned on me. I was still playing Last of Us on my launch PS3, and I am on my fourth 360.
Yeah, but to be fair,
the one downside I have on my launch PS3 is that I'm now at the stage where I'm deleting games.
Oh, yeah, it's way too small a hard drive. Pathetic.
But you can upgrade the hard drive, right?
I know, but
it has an easy transfer utility and everything. It's super
simple. Yeah, it's just with the PS4 coming, I've got the stage where
if it was only easy, Garnet.
It's cake.
I had a launch Xbox 360 that died within about 2 years. Then I actually got a loaner from Microsoft, that red ring. They sent me another one, that red ringed, and I gave up and bought an Xbox Slim, which I've actually...
The Slim has been fantastic.
Yeah, the Slim hasn't had any problems with it.
Right, but how long into the life cycle was the Slim introduced? You know?
Exactly. But yeah, you're right. We don't Microsoft have done everything in their power to destroy any goodwill and trust, especially in the gamers who supported the original Xbox. I mean, because I had an original Xbox day one, and that lasted me all the way through. And that was my go-to console. I skipped the PS2.
And you skipped the PS2.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the games that were coming out on Xbox, and I had like the feel because it was a PC in a box. Mm-hmm. And you know my background. I mean, you know how many PC games I've repped over the years and how many PC games I played, and that's what it felt like to me.
Nevertheless, it was the PlayStation 2.
You must love this generation.
Well, I actually know the PS3 is currently my, and has been for about 2 years, my favorite console.
I meant this upcoming generation because it's two PCs in a box.
Oh yes, well, I mean, I've got them both pre-ordered, but as I've said many a time on Twitter, I have my finger over the cancel button for Xbox One.
You're ready to pull the trigger on de-triggering.
I'm ready to drop it.
Click the safety on the
trigger. Ready to unbuy this at any point.
Well, I mean, the other...
Don't make me unbuy you!
It's one of those things, it's like, I pre-ordered the PS3 directly after the E3 announcement.
Yeah.
And the price and all that stuff. And then I ummed and ahed for a week over Xbox One. And I was like,
same place.
Yeah.
I did the reversal and I was like, okay, I'm in because I really want Forza.
Well, the only reason
I really want Forza,
I put the pre-order in because, like, all right, well, I'm going to need it for my job, but I was very reluctant to do it, and that's the thing. It's an Amazon pre-order; I can cancel it at any time.
Yeah. So hard for Microsoft to make the right decision anymore. How about this decision that now is starting to look maybe not so great about moving from points to real currency? Because now the realization, and by the way, for those of you who don't know, as part of the upcoming update, the point system going away, going to be replaced by real currencies for wherever territory you happen to live in. So it'd be Great British, be pounds. Where were they? Pounds or euros?
Pounds. It's pounds in the UK, euros.
And then euros throughout the rest of Europe. So whatever it is, you'll be in real money. But remember, folks, points have actually worked out pretty well for those who are bargain shoppers. There have been countless deals run online for point cards for discounted amounts.
You can work an exchange rate as a retailer with points, but you can't do that if it's, you can't sell something that's worth $20 for less than $20.
$20 is $20. You can't sell it for less.
No, people, I think a lot of people have been very upset that the points are going away because initially everybody was like, oh, I wish they had, and myself included, originally it's like, it would be so much easier if they had X, Y, and Z. But I mean, the amount of discount points cards I've picked up from Amazon over the years.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, it's worked out.
You just sit and wait. If you wait and you see them go on sale and you hop on those sales right away, you can pick up points for half price, basically. Yeah. And this is something.
It's a sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't thing because, it's just a double edged sword because I think it's great having real money. I think it's easier, it's clearer. You don't have that weird leftover.
You mean because you can look up and see, hey, this is $9.99.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about, like, how much is 1,200
points? There's a clarity there.
Plus, you're not giving somebody a bunch of money in advance. I mean, it's like, it's purchase by purchase.
I agree. And the funny thing is that this is happening at a time when mobile games now are very prominent. And one of the lessons of mobile game monetization is that having a second currency, in other words, selling things to people
hiding how much they're spending from.
In baubles.
Yeah.
Hides how much they're spending and can be very profitable. But another part of it is that mobile games are really successful at the same thing. Look, in any mobile game you see that has a currency, they don't even wait to run sales on special times. If you go in and buy a currency, it's like you can get 500 for X, but once you start buying more, they start giving you bigger and bigger, bigger discounts because they want you to have currency because they want you to spend it in the store.
Right.
Same story could have happened for Microsoft, but they abandoned it. This also messes up their rewards program. I don't know if you guys got this email, but it was like, starting August 1st, 2013.
My birthday.
You'll no longer be able to earn Microsoft points through the Xbox Live Rewards program.
Terrible birthday present, Microsoft.
I love their email. Not to worry, though. Since this currency change is impacting the structure of the program, we're taking the opportunity to make the Xbox Live Rewards program even better. You'll continue to get rewarded for doing the things you love on Xbox Live, just not with Microsoft points. So
real money then, Microsoft?
No.
You give us real money?
No, we didn't say that. So come back to rewards.xbox.com on September 1st, 2013 for the full scoop.
So wait, you're stopping it on August 1st.
Yes.
And we have a month to wait before we find out how you're
changing. You see, brother, it's July right now, and they have no fucking idea what they're doing. So they're just at least giving themselves an extra 30 days.
Pump the brakes.
They basically got to wait for all the magic 8-balls they ordered from China to arrive.
Oh, shit.
Well,
did anyone think about this with no points? What are we going to do with rewards?
What's her name? Just got the job. So she's assessing. What's that lady's name?
The head of Windows division.
Yeah, yeah. Former, but now current head of...
I didn't bring that to the table because I thought that was sort of insidey baseball. But yeah, Microsoft did their reorganization and they moved some folks around. They went from 5 business units to 4, and they have this new officer coming in to take what was sort of Matrix's role.
Yeah.
She'll have more responsibility as well because they had reduced from 5 to 4 business units. Yes.
Matrix.
You know what? They screwed up big time. They should have hired me.
Yeah, well, you know, I sure
did.
They,
you apply?
They, you know what?
I did a whole show where I said I'm happy to take over Microsoft Microsoft or EA. I said to both either company, $1 million.
Maybe that was your problem. Year, you should have been more specific.
Why don't we flip for it? You can have one. I'll take the other, and then we'll see. Like gentleman's bet.
Well, it depends. How attached to Madden are you?
Very.
You better take EA then, because I cancel that shit.
Oh, why fix it?
No, I'd cancel it.
You'd cancel Madden?
Yeah, fucking hate American football.
I think I have an idea why you didn't get the job.
I have an idea.
And then I'd get started on fixing FIFA and putting all that money into doing a rugby game.
We'd be called EA
rugby
FIFA
game.
A.
There you go. Yeah. EA rugby. That's good. What Marcus is going to hang his hat on.
Yeah. Right. Great sell. It'll sell really well in New Zealand and Wales.
So let's see. Last week we did the big question, audience question episode. Folks really liked it. So I guess I guess we have to bring that back. So we're going to bring it back. And here's how we're going to bring it back is that based off of y'all's interest and your commitment on the boards to really fueling it, because the thing is if we're going to do question segments, you guys have to provide really interesting questions, right?
What are you wearing?
And that's not ASL, okay? You just have to give us really good questions that can foster some conversation. But since you guys are into it, what we'll do is I will do a dedicated question thread each week on Shaq News in the show thread where you guys can post your questions. Feel free to talk about them. We can converse in the show thread about them. We'll still discuss them if they're good questions on the air, because obviously, you know, a typed conversation online is much different than a verbal conversation we have here on the show. And who knows? Maybe we'll figure out some more ways to get you to interact. Once upon a time, cool. I had this idea about like letting people do, voice recorded questions on MP3 or whatever. Right. Maybe we'll get to that. I don't know.
Have them put it on Skype, and then the NSA and you can look at them.
Awesome. By the way, they're not at all going to use Kinect for that.
No
Kinect spying whatsoever. No. They'll just be looking at the metadata from your Kinect.
They were actually thinking about it, but then
it's a series of heartbeat monitors.
Well, they realized that I'd pre-ordered it, and just for spite, I would end up playing games in my underpants in my living room, and that vision was just enough to put them off it.
So we actually have one for this week, just to throw out for you. This one is from Long Rifle 101. Mm. And Long Rifle threw this one out there. So what
it's
do you
not
guys...
the length of your rifle that matters. Everybody
it's
knows
the girth,
that.
Right?
It's the caliber it's of the... your bullet.
All right. Let's go.
Or how many grains are in the casing?
I don't even know what that is a euphemism for, but go ahead.
Leave it to your imagination.
Go ahead.
Threw it out there and said, what do you guys think about the remakes going forward into the next generation? And just to sort of fill this in, thinking about what's going to happen to the remakes. Remakes obviously have been a big part of Sony's strategy here at the latter stages of the PlayStation 3 era. A couple of them threw out there was, is Kojima just teasing us about MGS and the new engine? And is there any chance of a PlayStation 1's era Final Fantasy ever getting like a real HD treatment? That sort of stuff. So what do you think happens on Xbox One and PS4 with this idea of HD remakes?
I think that there's going to be more of them. And I think in the last generation, they tended to sell pretty well. Mm-hmm. So I think there will be more of them. And I welcome them. I think I enjoyed the fact that you could play Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and God of War and a lot of those games without jaggies. I'm a big fan of that. So I enjoyed it. I want more of it. Yes, give it to me, please. You look doubtful.
Well, also, I've got a mouthful of peanut.
Well, okay, you finish chewing, and I'll be the Jane, you ignorant slut, because I'm kind of on the other end of the spectrum here. I think that what happened here at the end of the PS3 era was a right time, right place, kind of perfect storm, because PlayStation 2 era games, though you can definitely tell the difference between PlayStation 3 era and PlayStation 2 era games, there's this easy to bridge divide where you can go and do like they've done with Shadow of the Colossus. Then keep in mind, they're not reimagining those games in toto. They're going back and they're cleaning things up. They're doing some new textures. They're they're not going through and redoing all of the models and adding, you know, bumping up the poly counts and changing the game substantively, right? And so you could sort of get away with that from PS2 to PS3. But I think that the same reason that we haven't seen PlayStation 1 games brought into PlayStation 3 will be the same reason that this idea of PlayStation 2's going to PlayStation 4 really poses a problem, because there's a tremendous amount of work. Everybody and their brother wants a Final Fantasy VII HD version, right? But there's no way to do what they've been doing with these other games on Final Fantasy VII. To do an HD Final Fantasy VII would be to create a whole new game. It would be to go in and build a game on a modern engine that was Final Fantasy VII, as opposed to just going in and saying, okay, we're going to take the guts of this game, we're going to take all of the geometry, the AI, all the systems, and we're going to clean it up, we're going to put in some textures, we're going to go through the game scene by scene and see, like, oh, you know, maybe if we, you know, if we focus our attention on here and the characters and some of this art and furnish this better, it's going to look great. But if you go and look at those HD games, while they look really nice, they don't look like PlayStation 3 games. They don't look like PlayStation 2 games anymore either, but they don't look like PlayStation 3 games. They look like really impressive HD versions, as the title says, of PlayStation 2 games. And so that's where I'm thinking, like, so we go into PlayStation 4. Do we need to take PlayStation 3 games and make HD versions of them? Because I don't know that the delta is going to be as noticeable. Like,
oh, I see what you're saying. Are they going to be making... I think it's still going to be PlayStation 1 and earlier.
Yeah.
They're going to be moved into this new console generation. I don't think you're going to see PS3 games being made.
And that's what I'm saying. It's hard to appreciate the difference, right? Like,
I agree with that. I don't think that's going to happen. But I still think you'll see, as he was pointing out, like MGS, PS1, Final Fantasy, those early games.
So there's the difference. So what he's talking about here, what Kojima's teasing about, was love to see Metal Gear Solid in the new engine. So that's right. That is that same sort of thing as Final Fantasy VII. That is saying, but this game is beloved. And there are a few titles like that.
And that's the key point, is that there are only a few titles where what's important about the game is sort of the story being told.
Yes.
And Final Fantasy and MGS are examples of that, where, you know, much like a movie remake, you want to see it with new actors, so to speak. You want to see it, you know, you want to see it revisualized, but because it isn't just a pure mechanics endeavor, it's a story that can,
like, you
can
saw
hold
with Twin
up.
Snakes. You saw Twin yeah. Snakes on GameCube or Resident Evil. You know, the Resident Evil GameCube remake, fantastic, but that was a Resident Evil remake, not an HD version. And that's where I need to draw the differentiation here, is that these HD remakes have been, production-wise, less of a commitment than remaking the game.
Right.
And I think that changes the ballgame.
All right. I'm going to say reboot, not remake. I'm a big fan of, for example,
Tomb Raider.
Resident Evil. Tomb Raider is a prime example, but Resident Evil 1 rebooted, you take the story, you take the premise, you take the mansion, but you redo it. Because when you're doing a HD version of games, yeah, it is only tarting it up and putting a bit of extra slap on and getting rid of the jaggies. A lot of the gameplay doesn't necessarily stand up nowadays.
Another good point.
You know, compared to, you know, what we are playing. I loved Resident Evil 1. There were issues with it, you know, for me, for the camera angle. The controls were kind of clunky. And if they took that whole premise of the mansion and being trapped in there and, you know...
But what's the difference between that and a sequel the video game space?
I'm talking about going back and taking that... I mean, I think...
Well, the difference is that it's not a sequel. It's the same story.
Right, but there's very few game... Resident Evil is a good example. But there's very few game franchises where the story kind of matters at all from game to game.
I beg to differ. I think, you know, and Resident Evil is a prime example, and you're right there. But that's the one that gets thrown out all the time, because Resident Evil got to number 4, hit, you know, and...
A paradigm shift.
And negatively so with 5 and 6, in a lot of people's opinion, my own included. And I would love to go back and see what they could do with that Resident Evil, that original story, and how it could be fleshed out, no pun intended, and expanded upon with, you know, HD graphics and all the various, you know, the memory that you could use to bring in new gameplay tropes, improve the aiming, improve the crafting, and just really just drag it kicking and screaming in.
But you could do that and call it Resident Evil 10.
But no, the story needs... the
Resident, yeah, it doesn't matter.
You think it's going to take them 4 more to get to that point?
The Resident Evil story has got so convoluted,
right,
that it needs... Somebody needs to go in there with a machete and clean it up and hack away all the crap. So you go back to the beginning and you start that all over again. Then you've got this, you know, this clear pathway, if you will. Let me throw another thing out to you with regards to Metal Gear Solid. They remake the original Metal Gear Solid, which, you know, they'd have to do, and change it up. Who's the voice of Snake?
Drop the mic. Boom. Out. Gone.
But I'm asking you guys, you know, what happens, yeah, when...
It has to be Hader. It has
would
to be.
Would he do it?
Well, you know, I don't know, but it would... In my mind, it would have to be. And I guess, and I could see people on both sides of the aisle now would say, well, you know, that's the thing about a reimagining. If it's a reimagining, it doesn't have to be Hader.
But I just think that the number of
haters
games,
would object.
I would feel so betrayed were it not. And I'm sorry, I just would. But that's because for me, Metal Gear was like such a important game to me at the time. And, you know, God, I just remember like me and Kynan playing through the demo over and over and over and over and over, and then playing the game. It's just like, it was such a big memory.
I remember playing, and I remember being just really just having a blast the first time I crawled into a cardboard box. And, you know, I was just, yeah, this is fine. Look, I mean, I'd point to my girlfriend at the time and say, look, I'm in the box.
And she looked at you like, you are a fruit.
What's in the box?
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. I can see the profitability in the HD remakes. I would like to see, especially as, like I said, technologies evolve, gaming techniques have evolved, gaming tropes have evolved, that they can go back and look at some of these classic franchises and drag them quick, kicking and screaming. I think Tomb Raider is a prime example. I mean, you look at Tomb Raider when it first, that you know, you put them side by side, and not even graphically, the gameplay in the first Tomb Raider game is friggin' horrible.
Right, but Tomb Raider was a reboot and a sequel. It was not a remake of the first game.
No, but it was a reboot, but then you actually put it by the game that it, you know, they based it on, and that game, I mean, go back and play.
No, I am agreeing with you, but what I'm saying is that I think you could probably count on one hand the number of game franchises that if you went back and took the original game and updated the gameplay, it would be distinguishable from a sequel. Do you know what I'm saying? Is that most games, what happens in a sequel is that you're bringing it into new technology. That's what most sequels in games are, is a reimagining of the first game's gameplay, and you're giving it a new story. But that's what... There's very few franchises where...
I don't know that I'm going to necessarily...
Okay, let's say a classic like Doom.
Okay.
What's the difference between remaking Doom and making Doom 4?
I think that you pulled a title and a era that does support what you're talking about, where A, it was out of the PC world, and it was a pretty simple first-person shooter at its core. It was, hey, right, we tap into hell, and we go shoot the demons. And so it's pretty simple. There wasn't some place for them to go with that. I would not say, though, that in the modern generation that has been equally the case. Like, would you say that BioShock to BioShock 2 was just about changing the technology?
Well, no, but that was sort of a rushed sequel.
And it was a different group and at the same time.
And it was like, on the same technology for the most part. But
I think that oftentimes...
Traditionally, sequels are about giving you the same experience you had in the first one, but updating.
And if they're of different sorts of games. Look, real-time strategy games, I would agree. Real-time strategy games, they were all about, you know, when you get to the sequel, it was more stuff, higher resolutions, better AIs. Everything you liked about the first game, only now better.
Right.
And first-person shooters, as they were in that original era, you know, Quake 1, Quake 2, Quake 3, yes, I think they fell through that same sort of phenomenon. But in the era of more narrative-driven games and more, you know, complex systems, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, RPGs? Witcher 1, Witcher 2?
Yeah, I guess, but I feel like...
The Final Fantasies,
for the most part,
go through almost all.
Well, the difference between Final Fantasy is that it's a sequel is a completely new universe, so that doesn't that's. I was agreeing with you that Final Fantasy is one of those where you would want to see, you know, Final Fantasy VII, for example, and story has a big part of it. But I think, I mean, I maybe I'm just being contrarian
I think there are games that have had that happen. I think that you made a good example with Doom, and I think that a number of those games through that era did do that. It's like, hey, we've got more badass tech. Let's go back and do basically the same thing, but we can do it really more cool now.
Right.
But I think going back to Resident Evil, that's the prime example of a game that could argue for a reboot because of the way it hit a wall, went to number 4.
And it's lost its way.
It's totally lost its way. Yeah. So you can go back and not do the cover-based shooting and go and put, focus more on the story. Because, I mean, that game was more tension-filled than any other game at its time.
I think Evil Within is the Resident Evil reboot.
Oh, it does. Yeah. I mean, Evil
Within. I think that's the Resident Evil reboot.
Yeah. I mean, I actually went into that E3 demo thinking, okay, this is going to be Resident Evil 4 or 5 or whatever. And then I started getting into that demonstration at E3, and then it didn't even become Resident Evil.
It's got some Silent Hill.
Yeah, it went full on Silent Hill at one point, and I'm like, oh,
because I'm
not a big fan of Silent Hill either. But I mean, this game just seems to punch my buttons. I'm very into it.
Buttons punched.
Yeah.
What I would love is some of those old games, those really old games that I grew up with. Like Planescape Torment and Ultima and the Kate Archer games, Nolf.
Yeah.
Like those, or take like Planescape Torment and take that story and voice act it, put it in a 3D engine. Like that would be super thrilling for somebody like me, but I think that's a relatively small niche.
I think No One Lives Forever could come back as they could redo No One Lives Forever 1 and 2. Obviously the expansion packs were really forgettable.
But I haven't spoken to this man in now going on like 3 years, but what the hell happened to Craig Hubbard?
I don't know.
He was like the creative force behind that and Shogo, one of my favorite unsung heroes. And
I love No One Lives Forever games so much.
I wish
that those were still being made.
Kate Archer could come back. Let's face it, now is an opportune time to bring back another ass-kicking female protagonist.
See, I would say that she wasn't ass-kicking.
No,
that's more like wet.
It's not necessarily the literal ass-kicker.
Okay.
It's the having the brains up there and the sharp wit and the repartee.
Can I rename her Badass instead of ass-kicking? Can I do that?
Like we're splitting hairs.
I feel like I'm splitting hairs in the right way. I mean, I think the ass kicking has an implication to it.
It could be verbal as well as physical. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
I just love
British.
The humor
I kick
of
your
those
ass
games.
With my tongue.
Oh,
you see?
Oh,
oh,
thank you.
I don't.
I think also a lot of it is up to the developers, right? Because you look at so for instance, this week Insomniac rolls out plans for a new Ratchet and Clank game.
Nice segue
on PS3.
PS3, by the way, interesting. Here now is a developer that has exclusives with both sides of the fence. Like, pretty amazing ability to, like, just... Can you imagine how walled off the place must be? It's like, oh, this team over here is working on the Xbox One. You cannot win. It's sealed down like Fort Knox, I bet.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what we're talking about here is Ratchet & Clank Into the Void. They showed it off with a video trailer. And the big thing here is that they're pushing to go back to what they call the traditional Ratchet and Clank. And I thought it was really cool. James Stevenson did the unveiling post on the Sony blog, on PlayStation blog. So next time we're on, we get him to talk about it. Cool things, though, is it's going to be downloadable and Blu-ray, but it's a $30 title. And they said that, look, it's not the size and scope of a $60 game, but it's much larger than anything we've done in the downloadable space before. And we're coming back to it with, pardon the pun or whatever, but they're coming back to it reloaded with a bunch of these ideas for all of the things that made Ratchet and Clank cool, namely weapons that have been kind of incubating while they've been doing the other Ratchet and Clank games that weren't quite the traditional Ratchet and Clank game. This is really cool. This is to me more exciting and interesting than just saying I'm going to go back and remake something.
This to me, when I saw that trailer, it made me smile because it was going back to the Ratchet and Clank. The last one I really enjoyed was it Future Tools?
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved that game, and I spent a lot of time. Again, it was the weapons. It was exploring this 3D world, and they've got it right, and they've nailed it. And I'm glad it's coming up for the PS3. I mean, that's another great PS3 game to expect this fall. PS3 is the best lineup of any game system this fall. I'm going to make that statement
now. So what's got you whoring out the PS3?
Beyond
Two Souls?
except that one.
Oh, come on, man. That's awesome.
I'm not the biggest fan.
What? Neither of you?
I think that
it's going to be awesome, man.
I think that I love David Cage's work and that I adored both Fahrenheit Project Indigo Prophecy, whatever it was called here, Indigo Prophecy. And I mean, we all know that I adored Heavy Rain, but something about Beyond Two Souls, even in its most recent demo, just hasn't, I don't know. I'm very cautious about it at this point because it wasn't clicking there. And I'm really hopeful. I mean, like I said, I love that sort of stuff. You know, I love that sort of experience driven game. That's all about, you know, pulling you into the world and forgetting that you're, you know, playing a game and just being part of this interactive fiction.
And you're seeing her life through years and years and years. It just seems like such an interesting, ambitious project.
More than anything, the militaristic thing at E3 really put me off.
For me, I'm going to play it, and I'm going to go in there, hopefully, you know, with an open mind to whatever David Cage has done. Heavy Rain, I hated, because I was playing.
All right, it, annoyed gamer.
No, I mean, and it just rubbed me up the wrong way from the get go. It just seemed so, I don't know, pretentious and up its own backside. And you know how much I love games with immersion. I mean, I will go and I will sit in front of my PC or my console, and I could sit there for days and just be immersed in a game, and it just didn't grab me. And then, you know, I started learning a little more about Mr. Cage and his, you know, his statements about technology, telling the story. You have to have the technology for the emotion. And it really began to rub me the wrong way, because he began to sound like friggin' George Lucas with that whole, you know, yes, green screen and imagine this and imagine that, and it's technology. And I'm like, dude, no, it's not the technology. And, you know, he, you know, one of the things from the, and I think we discussed this briefly last time I was on, at the original PS4 launch when he came on stage to talk about Beyond and the technology of the PS4, and this is what we can do, and now we're finally getting to the stage where the technology can show us the emotions. And I just got up, and I was actually heading off to do something for GT, and I'm glad it came along at that time, because I get up a lot. And
I just got up and left to go to an appointment.
Well, yeah, but I was like, I mean, I couldn't stand it, because it's like, dude, you want to talk about emotion? Let's talk about the game of the year last year, The Walking Dead. How much emotion did that deliver? And that was not the most technologically advanced engine ever. Let's look at some of the aspects.
So your gripe is that the dude wants technology to move forward.
My gripe is the guy seems to think that you can't get emotion in and feeling and any sort of reaction out of a game unless it's covered with a spankly engine shows your freckles and your smile.
Yeah, I mean, that misrepresents his position.
Yeah, I've never read it to where you can't get it. I've only read it to he wants to create real virtual actors.
Right.
And to have virtual actors,
George Lucas.
Well,
but he's working in a completely different medium. So it's
that's the other thing is, this is just from reading interviews and watching interviews. He doesn't strike me as somebody who actually wants to be in games. He wants to be making movies.
No, he wants. I had a fantastic interview with him a couple of 3 years ago at there's that expression. Someone actually joked with me about using a couple of 3 years ago the other day. But anyway, about Gamescom.
That's 6 years. A couple of three.
This was 3 years ago at Gamescom, and we talked about Heavy Rain before it had come out. And he was definitely very passionate about what they could achieve through it being a game as opposed to it being another medium. Because what happens in the game, and I think this is one of the things that was probably the most moving part of playing Heavy Rain for me, was how what you did in the game rippled through the game in so many ways.
Exactly.
And that's what's
exciting about what he's doing, is that the experience of me playing it, everybody's like, you just want movies as video games. Well, the experience of me playing it is similar in a lot of ways to watching a movie, but it's a movie that I helped craft, that my interaction with determined what happened in that movie seamlessly. And the seamless part is kind of working against the perception of it, because what you don't, all the stuff that's written and acted and included in the game that you don't see because you didn't happen to go that way narratively is is invisible to you as the player. So that's what's so exciting, is that I'm watching, and I don't want all games to be this way, but yeah. I certainly love that one dude is doing that, and I'm so excited to try Beyond, because I think it's going to be even more interesting, because it's doing stuff a movie cannot do, i.e. tell this kind of story and make what I do matter.
Well, as somebody who plays, you know, I play a lot of RPGs, and I mean, Mass Effect 2 is one of my favorite games. I mean, and I felt let down by the ending of Mass Effect, because it didn't give me what you said there.
Right.
It didn't get, you know, I felt I was making all these decisions, and then that ending at the end of 3 didn't really give me that payoff.
You're not at all alone on that.
But I know that. But it's interesting that, I mean, I didn't get any of the feeling of joy or being a part of the world of Heavy Rain that I got from Mass Effect. And, you know, I mean, I'm normally, you know, again, huge fan of film noir, you know, that whole gritty, you know, the rain falling and you are the gumshoe and you have this murder mystery. And it just seemed to me, and I haven't played it in a good few years. You know, I played it when it first came out, and I put it in a corner, and it's still sitting in the corner.
Did you finish it?
No. I just didn't have, I mean, that's the thing. I am also, you know, if I'm going to put X amount of hours into a game, I mean, I was not feeling this game.
So that's a problem, because it's also
the quick time. It was the, you know, the quick time stuff as well was really getting on my nerves. Not a big fan of quick time. And it just began to feel to me, it felt like Night Trap on the Sega CD.
Well, okay. Ouch. I think you're throwing. I think
ouch.
You're bringing a lot of baggage. No, to it, but that's fine.
It was that. It was that same feeling of.
But it's also,
you
know, a burn. So here's the thing: it's also a burn game. Because, and by a burn game, I mean that the further you get into it, this slow burn builds, because of the ripples of effect based off of what actions you've taken start to. At least you start to feel like you can notice some of them. And many of them, like Jeff said, you won't notice unless you sit down and have a conversation with someone. And go, so. When the car was underwater, did you?
That was the most magical part of that game experience, was talking with Garnet, talking with Alex and Dan about when we would start having conversations, and you'll just casually refer to a moment, and somebody else will go,
"What?
Wait, what? That never happened to me." And you'd be like, "Well, what did happen to you?" And you hear what happened to him, and it's like, "Holy crap!" You know, like there's this whole universe of possibilities.
And talk about multiple endings. I mean, this is a game that has multiple endings, but instead of the multiple endings being, you know, radically different of, you know, on one of them you launched on a spaceship to go to Mars, whereas on another one you wound up eating peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
Yeah, you're the messiah or you're the devil.
It's all multiple endings that are wrinkles of how the final encounter wound up and who was where and when.
And various characters, what happened to them, and you're there for all that. Like, I remember,
I'm being careful,
point,
because if you haven't played Heavy Rain, I still highly recommend that you play
the statue
it.
Of limitations,
well, I mean, I,
on that.
You know, the statue of limitations that Heavy Rain is forever.
I stopped playing it, and at the time I was back in PR. I wasn't doing I wasn't doing video game journalism, so I wasn't able to sit and have these conversations with other people. But I look, maybe I should go back and try it.
It's one of my favorite games of the generation.
But I mean, I still take issue with, and you know, maybe Mr. Cage needs to work on his communication, or maybe I just need to be more forgiving.
No.
But I feel, well, I just, like I said, I feel that, you know, this fascination with technology is, and you know, it's common within the games industry, but when, you know, I see games with a fraction of the budget, games with a fraction of the technology. You know, I will highlight again The Walking Dead, delivering some of the most amazing writing, the most fleshed out characters.
I don't disagree with you about The Walking Dead, but I do wish, I would love to see The Walking Dead executed with better technology. I think that would be, I love the comic book look. I'm a huge comic book fan.
Or,
I love that.
Or maybe.
But it would be interesting to see what those guys would do with the technology from, for example, L.A. Noire. I think that would be fascinating to see what.
See, Jeff, I don't know about that. I think that part of the appeal of Walking Dead, though, is that it still reflects the graphic novels. It is an embodiment of the. I don't know that I want to get rid of that.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm not saying that. I'm just curious. I'm curious what that play experience would be like if you match the kind of moment to moment that.
Sure.
That Walking Dead had with that technology. I think it'd be fascinating to see Telltale working with that, those kind of tools.
Well, that's why I liked The Last of Us, because I think, you know, it did make that, it did jump that gap from, you know, the comic booky of The Walking Dead to, again, some incredible characters, some really fleshed out stuff in this more, you know, realistic or semi-realistic looking environment. I mean, and that's what Naughty Dog do, you know, better than most people. Yeah. And, you know, you and I had conversations over text when I saw, you know, we were talking about The Last of Us. And I mean, that game to me delivered atmosphere in spades. I mean, first 20 minutes alone made me like, wow. I mean, that was an emotion puller.
That's Saving Private Ryan.
No spoilers here, but there's moments at the end of that game where because you read performance on the face of characters, you know what characters are thinking, which is not the case with The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead, they have, you know, four or five preset facial positions.
And you can't read those things in a graphic novel either.
But I also...
No, I agree. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying...
You can't read them in a book. I mean,
I'm not saying that it's inappropriate or...
Different
or
media gives you different ways for your imagination and your senses to work.
You're absolutely right. I'm just saying it would be interesting.
It's the quality of the voice acting as well. I mean, the voice acting is, you know, it goes back to audible, you know,
radio play?
Yeah, radio plays, books, you know, written...
books on tape.
Books on tape.
Okay, yeah, sure.
You know, it's
like
that
about the Fluffies.
Fluffies or Doctor Who. But I mean, it goes back to that, you know, that having actors who can deliver the lines, and you could close your eyes and you can listen and you can imagine with your head what their facial actions could be. And that's why The Walking Dead pays off. And I would say that the voice acting in The Last of Us is sufficiently strong that you don't need all the bells and whistles. And
well, but don't you think that that's selling it short to call it voice acting? Because those guys weren't voice acting. They were
acting.
Right.
I mean, they were acting. Exactly.
I mean, this is the
none
beauty
of those
performance
guys were sitting,
capture.
That's the right word. And
none of those guys were sitting with headphones on.
I'm not saying that voice acting is a bad thing. I mean, it's a skill because you're taking away, you know, sight, which is one of the most powerful senses we have. And, you know, you're replacing it with just a reliance on, you know, your voice and what people can hear and people can draw from that. My point being is I don't feel I need to see wrinkled brows and freckles and 100 million polygons on the face to receive and enjoy a performance.
Okay,
like that.
I figured it out. You just don't like people.
I spent 15 years in PR. Of course I hate people.
All right, I've got another one for you. We're going to take a little break, but when you come back, I've got another one of these games versus technology conversations to have, and it's around State of Decay, which has been very popular on Xbox Live over the past couple of weeks. We'll talk about all that more when Weekend Confirm continues.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game, but what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, so I've been informed during the break that neither of my partners in crime have played State of Decay. Gentlemen, Marcus at least knows it because he's holding out for PC.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah, I've been pitched on it, and you know, a couple of people have recommended I play it because it seemed up my proverbial alleyway. But then, you know, I was like, shall I buy this on, you know, Xbox Live? And then I saw it's coming to Steam. So why the hell would I play it on an 8-year-old console?
I need a zombie break.
A zombie break. So for those of you who don't know, here's the pitch, thumbnail pitch on State of Decay. Open world survival zombie game. If it sounds like, you know, other mods you might have heard about for Arma. Well, there's some similarity, but the thing that they're going for in depth here is that as you play the game, all of the NPCs are existing in the world as well. Your interactions with them and their actions independent of you serve to create the game that, once it starts going, develops into something new every time you play it.
I think that's pretty an awesome idea. So does it work?
It absolutely does work. But and I want to talk about some of those things. Here's the counterpoint, is that especially if you come at this having come out of Last of Us, the delta between what Last of Us looks like and what this game looks like, and yes, complainers, I know this is an open world game, so obviously the resources are different, the animations are different, all that kind of stuff, but all that taking into consideration, running around in this game as my character with wooden animation, with...
Should have taken a zombie break, dude.
It's just...
Wait for it to come out on PC.
It's not going to look that much better, okay? It's not like they're going to make a whole raft full of new assets. The thing is, it's open world. It is a very big world. And they're very smart. I mean, they do a very cool thing about the way it starts. It almost starts in like a classic horror movie sort of style, where you come back from your away from the world fishing trip with your fishing buddy to the campground, and oh shit, what the hell is with that dude chomping on that dead body over there?
Hey, are you seeing this?
It's like you're coming back to Crystal Lake and Jason is there or something. And it's awesome. And immediately off the bat, and then the little campground area is like your trainer zone. It's like where you learn how the game works. Immediately, you are presented with a number of different things you can do, and you realize very quickly that based off the decisions that you're making, other things are happening. If you leave an area and leave some people, they may not make it to the time you get back. Or if you don't go help someone who's under attack, they're probably not going to survive and they can't be your friends. And
do you need friends?
Oh yeah, you need... Well,
you
yes.
Hate
oh,
people. Yeah. Exhibit B. Really,
can't I just stand there and applaud as they're having the crap ripped out of them?
And it's a big mechanic in the game, because the way that you play the game necessitates you switching between players that are within your...
Tribe? Troop?
Yeah, gang. within your group. So you build these strongholds, right? And the strongholds have your group in them, and you have to make friends with people before you can switch to them. So let's say that, you know, in game terms, I meet Marcus and Jeff, and now I have to look at like Marcus and Jeff's player cards to see what they're into, to look at their, to gauge their how they're responding to the world, what's going on, look at the missions I can go out and do, and then find ways to build rapport with them. And then once I've done that, hopefully
like,
become
hey,
friends.
Hey dude, hey bro, what are you into? Hey man,
sounds hey. Like this chat roulette experience I
hey,
had once.
Bro.
You should just switch. You should just go right now to pick chat. It'll be way faster.
Okay, so I, as a player, determine what I'm into, or you're basing it's based on my behavior.
It's based on your behavior. It's based on your behavior, and then you've got to make decisions as you're sitting in your. So very early on, you leave the campground. You get into this town. The town is quite large, and then suddenly now you're presented with all these different things that you can do. So you know there's a number of hives that are close by, or you know with like outbreaks in them, and there are a group of people in your group who are petrified because look, there's this house right down the street from us and it's got all these zombies in it. But at the same time, your friend might be dying and you need to go find health, you know, you need to go find medicine for them. So do you go look for medicine for your friend, or do you try and go clear out the zombie group that's inside this building? And while all that's going on, the shambling horde may show up at the front door of the campment that you've made and attack. And if you're not there to help them defend it, some of the people who you met the first time might die.
That's
or
cool.
They might not. It is
I
because
dig that.
It all starts to become it all becomes procedurally generated. The horde attacks, and there is no set like Jim and Bob and Mary die. Jim and Bob and Mary do their best to defend the homestead that is as it was when you left it. And if you're there to help, you're going to be able to better defend. And if you're not, one of them may die. And which one of them may die depends on what happens, or one of them might just get injured. So it is a really cool high concept.
Yeah, and.
And I'm just finding it trouble to get drawn into it, because then at the same time...
The presentation,
and then, you know, those of you out there, feel free to knock me, because I'm selling up all these things that are so cool about it, and maybe I'll try and go back to it again. I've gone back to it a couple times, and each time I go back to it, I get into it at first, but then I'm like, yeah, but you know what? Wandering around and whacking at dudes with this machete, it's just so... It feels so much like I'm just reducing that part of the game to just a system, and I'm not feeling drawn into the world as much. Well, at the same time, the counterpoint is like I'm really drawn into it because there's all these different the role-playing part of it is really amazing because it is actually putting those constraints on me of making really hard decisions. And that's what I think we like about The Walking Dead, is that there are those hard decisions. And this game does exactly that same thing. It puts you in those positions. It is a very limited resource game. So I think one thing we talked about, you know, like the zombie world being very limited, this game is super limited resources. Like you use your machete and your machete like gets broken. That's a problem because now you need to go find something and you're not going to find stuff all over the place. And it's not super easy to get things all the time. Hmm. And so here's another thing. The army may show up at one point in time, right? And so when the army shows up, depending on who you've made friends with and what their character profiles are, who goes down and talks to the army will get a different response. Yeah. In other words, like just like the survivalist chick is not going to do as good as the guy who was in the ROTC because each of them has a different way of approaching and the army's going to perceive them in different ways. There's so many systems under the hood going on here and it's really cool how it's all working. And then back to your thing, Mark, is like, how much technology do I need? Zombie Labs, the studio that made it, I think that's their name, they've already said that they have an ideal of building this game, but doing it like super badass with multiplayer in a really high-end engine. Keep in mind, this game was $15. It cost me all $15 on Microsoft Live. Like that's like, and for $15, it is a ridiculously awesome game. I mean, like it's awesome at that price and for what they've built. It's just, then I get into the time balance thing and you know, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, cause it's summer games and then yeah. I get the ebb of flow. I don't know. And maybe I did need a zombie break, too.
Zombie break.
Maybe yeah. I did need a zombie break.
You know what I
break.
Used for my zombie break?
Oh, you know the other thing that's awesome about this game is that it actually treats zombies the way you expect them to be. You can shoot zombies in anything other than the head a billion times, and they don't die.
Right.
There's no like.
But if you kneecap them, can they drop and start crawling as
yes.
opposed, you know, they're not yeah. bullet sponges, though.
Yeah, they're not. Well, so they're bullet sponges the way you would expect a zombie to be a bullet sponge. If you sit there and shoot them in the chest a few times, you may stagger them. They may even fall down, but they're just going to eventually get the hell back up and start coming at you. And if you like kneecap them and hurt them, then obviously they're going to crawl and be, you know, hurt. But at the same time, until you take out their head, whether it be like with a shovel or a shot or whatever, like they're still zombies. They're not going to stop. And I think that's really cool because it brings in that whole, like, I don't know, just like always coming at you. And it's really like this. It feels like a zombie apocalypse game made. It's pretty cool. It's pretty well executed. Hmm. And that's the thing. But so tech wise, if I told you all this and then judging against what you've seen in screens and videos, how much does the presentation part put you off to the game?
Well, The presentation, yeah, it does put me off, but it also put, you know, the fact that it's also on 360. I mean, you know.
What's wrong with that?
And again, I'm not trying to slag off the 360 because, you know, I've got so many games on the 360 and for the longest time it was my go-to console. I mean, it could be the same if it was the same presentation issues on any console. For me, that's the sort of game I know I could get invested in and I could spend a lot of time on and it's something I'd want to do on my PC.
Because for me, I think it's nice because this is a game, as a zombie game, where a lot of times you want to think about things too. And I kind of enjoy just like sitting on my couch with my feet propped up on the coffee table.
Yeah, you haven't been to my house where I've got my, you know, I've got the games room and I've got the memory foam beanbag.
Oh, okay.
Where I can sit and it's like molded to my back
the
and
MFBB.
Oh, it's brilliant. But I mean, again, you know, I'm sitting in front of my big screen and I've got my little tray and all that sort of stuff.
Hey, Marcus, you never got a chance to. I probably because I interrupted you like I just did right there. I apologize. But you never got a chance to see all the PS3 games that you're excited about because I threw out Beyond.
And oh, for the fall,
we went off that.
You said yeah. that this fall PS3
we went off
it.
That train. So
yeah,
what are the PS3 games that you're excited about?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think the third party lineup is particularly strong, and I know that's across the board. But I mean, a lot of the games that I saw at E3 were, you know, on third party looked really, really cool. I mean, Assassin's Creed Black Flag on PS3 looks really, really nice. I actually forgot about it, and I had a list, and it's just gone right out of my head. What's coming out for the PS3 this year?
Gran Turismo.
There's more than that, though. There is more than that. What else is coming out? Because
we don't have to keep you on the spot. We can come back to it if you think of them
for exclusives.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I'm gonna have to look them up.
Well, I will toss back this direction and ask this question: how much do you think that the goodwill for PlayStation 4 will influence what platform people play Grand Theft Auto on?
Huh? That's an interesting question. I don't know.
Grand Theft Auto was a PlayStation title through and through.
You know what it depends on? It depends on how damn good that GTA 5 multiplayer mode is. Because if people are buying that game for multiplayer,
You think they'll still go to Live?
I think the multiplayer ecosystem of Live hasn't been adversely affected.
But what if they're done with Live? PlayStation Online still free.
That's true. That's true. I just think people are ingrained in their Xbox Live friends list. I mean, that's the sense I get. It's also
single Blu-ray, Blu-ray solution on PlayStation 3 as opposed to a two disc set on 360. And people get uptight about that. I don't know why that bothers people because you're installing it anyway. But
how many people actually play Grand Theft Auto for the multiplayer?
Well, very.
I know there is a hardcore crowd who love going on and doing it, but Grand Theft Auto is not a game that screams multiplayer.
I agree with
me.
You, but if that multiplayer reveal is like whiz bang amazing pants,
then the end of the video,
it certainly looks like
it. Awesome. But here's the thing: is I agree that not many people get into it. Like, look back at 1UP. We got into playing it for a like very hot minute, and like I remember, like Che was super into it, and we would like do, but all we did, despite the fact that they had spent so much time and effort getting modes cool, all we really wanted to do was the thing we had always thought we wanted to do, which was
run around and break stuff.
Well, run around, get 5 stars, see how long you can live.
Yeah.
And we would like set up these crazy deals where we'd like land helicopters on top of buildings, like fully kitted out, and start the biggest freaking fight you could do and get as many police pulled into it as possible, blow as many up as possible, and then see how many of us could ditch our star rating and start it all over again.
And it looks like from the chaos of just that little glimpse at the end of the video, it looks pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, more, but
I'd like to see co-op. I really would.
I think a lot of us would like to see co-op. I don't think it's happening.
I don't think it's happening either.
Three player co-op. For the, you know,
God, that would be so awesome.
Taking, you know, each control of each, you know, individual, the players.
I'm confused based on that video, which is
that video is so bad. Awesome. I want to talk about the video.
Yeah, well, based
but
on
I
want
to, but it's not me. Hold your thought. Write it down for a second.
Yeah.
Never answer the question. How much do you think people come back to PlayStation? There's no promise of exclusive DLC for Xbox this time. Yeah. There's this great love for PlayStation again that's back in the consciousness. And look, although it had its moment on the 360, this is a series that built itself as a PlayStation series.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that's where I'm going to play it on PS3.
It's on PS3.
Yeah. I want to play it on PS3. Fucking see.
Well,
dude.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'd love to play it on PC
makes
too.
Makes me so sad.
Well, you saw they had an ad up for you know developer for PC,
which means it's so far off.
Well, because don't you think they're going to make like a next gen version?
Yeah.
And if you're going to make a next gen version, doesn't it make sense to like track that alongside a PC version that
goes back to the PCs in a box?
Yeah, it bugs me though because I want that first experience of playing that game to be the best experience. I don't want to have to wait for the best experience. And it's going to be better. It's going to be better on a PC. It's going to be better on the next gen.
You know what? After watching that video, I am not the least bit worried about my first experience with this game. I am not at all worried about it. So what were you going to say about...
So what confuses me about that video, which is spectacular and makes me salivate, is this sort of idea that when you check in with the other characters and you do that zoom out and zoom into their lives... Mm-hmm. They're in the middle of doing something awesome. Like,
did you miss out on something?
Are they already? Yeah. Are they constantly doing awesome stuff?
I think the answer might be yes.
How fuck it? I have that male what's on the other channel thing. That's crazy. That's like, well, this, however good this show is, there might be something better on that in that show.
And I got a sense they're going to feed that.
What? How am I going to? You know,
I'd actually be really happy with, you know, with the zoom in and, you know, zooming into another character and not always having them do something awesome. And just, you know, imagine that you switch and he's just
TV.
He's sitting on the toilet reading Playboy.
already 7 PBRs into the evening and like, well, shit, I'm already drunk. Well, I guess I'll be playing.
Oh, you know, you zoom in and he's in the middle of holding a phone in one hand and a takeaway menu in the other.
I think it's going to work on the worst qualities of my nature, which is I want to have the optimal experience of this, and who should I be right now to maximize that?
That's part of the you're never going to trade it in juice. That's part of the never going to trade it in juice, because you're going to want to go back and play it again because you're going to think, oh, you know what? I remember that time and I was right here.
Do you think that they, all three dudes, are on their own linear path and you can hop in and see their linear path and play their linear path so that each time you play through it, if you jump in, you know, 3 hours into one guy, he'll be in the same exact place as 3 hours in a different playthrough.
I think the way they'll run it is that each of the missions will serve as sort of push pins in the timeline. And that during those mission times, there the synchronization will be 100%.
Right.
As you saw, like, so that really cool heist or like rappelling scene where, you know, the one dude is inside the boardroom and then you got your other guy across the way providing sniper support, and you flash back so you can provide support, and then you flash back so you can get out. Yeah. I think they'll do that during missions. And I think then during the non-mission time or free roam time, that they will leave things pretty sloppy, pretty open, and that everybody will be off doing stuff. And that
I have so many questions, though. What happens if I get? I mean, I watched that video several times, and I just had so many questions. What if I get a 5-star police rating, and then I pop out and hang out with other dude who's halfway across California? Does that 5-star rating get resolved for me because I'm not playing it?
That's a great question. Yeah.
You know,
that's
like
I don't know.
Or am I restricted from popping out of my dude if I have a certain level of star rating?
Maybe so. That actually might be the way to
You know, it's just like, what are the limits of this system?
Jeff is making the, oh my God, my mind is blown symbol. He's got both hands up to his forehead temples like, oh my God.
Well, it did blow my mind. It did blow my mind. Like, how detailed is the simulation of the three guys going through their daily lives to when I jump into them? Are they constantly going about their day? And then I jump in, I'm like, no, you're not having a sandwich, dude. You're going out and robbing, you know, you're going out and doing some crazy shit.
And what do you miss? You know, what do you miss while you're not with them?
Right.
I mean, yeah, will some of the side missions pop up and vanish if you're not with that right character at the right time? Which goes back to your never trading it in. But the other thing is, I think that...
But that's also that's the insidious side. I think it's also, from their perspective, like making it really unique, making it a really cool experience that you have from playing the game.
Well, I also think that anybody who turns around and says, you know, when Grand Theft Auto comes out, I think, what's the 17th of September?
September, yes.
And anybody who says, I completed it in the first, sort of, like, you know, day deserves to have their balls removed with a rusty spoon, because they are obviously missing out on so much with this game. And, you know, I like to be a completionist. And the whole thrill for me is not necessarily the storyline. It's everything else that's going on, this entire world or this entire state of, you know, Southern California that they have. And are you telling me that I'm just going to, you know, there's only a small amount of side missions? No, there's going to be a huge amount
of shit tons of stuff
per character.
Oh, yeah.
And then you throw in the vehicles and the customization and the exploration.
By the way, the customization thing. So now you're able to customize your car with performance upgrades, with like doodads all over. Like you put like, you know, fender flares on it and new rims and like, you got like total craziness there. Customize your guns. And I love how they've also talked about improving the shooting system, because
yeah,
there's one thing.
Yeah, that was a big point that I'm happy
And about. We've been conjecturing about that, and they're like, yeah, well, actually, we pulled from both our recent games. We pulled, you know, like the cover system mechanics and that sort of stuff from Red Dead, and then the transition in and out of aiming mode from Max Payne 3. They have three different modes of aiming in the game.
Here's my yet another question. How does the save system work? I hope it's very different, because that's one of my biggest gripes with Grand Theft Auto. I never have liked the idea of, I save it and then I wake up in my bed and I have to go and figure out where the fuck I'm going and who.
Well, this is the mindfuck. There is no save. You have to play it all the way through. You turn your
Good
console
luck.
Off.
Like
you
the old
lose
NES
it.
Days where we used to just leave it on.
Yeah.
but no, like if I'm one dude and I go and I, you know, save my game in my room, what are the other two dudes saved? Like what?
Of course, you're
guessing
saving,
it's more like a freeze point
a mark.
In time.
Yeah, it's like you're saving a point in time.
I hope, man.
And that would be great, because, yeah,
that
whole waking up in your bed. I mean,
I hate that shit.
It would be nice if it was just, you know, you hit the save button is like the pause button, and it's like, whoosh, everything draws to, you know, everything freezes, save data, everything is, and then you start up and you
don't doubt Rockstar's ability to blow you away with something like this.
They've already blown me away.
They have consistently
boggled.
Done, yeah, more of these things that have gotten me. And also, I just wrote down a word or a name of a game here. Reminds me that the one game that I haven't played by Rockstar, I've always meant to go back and play, is Bully.
Bully.
It's supposed to be really, really good.
It is good. I never really understood the massive amount of sort of street cred and hype it got. I think it's good because it's so different, but. Mm-hmm. The story is really interesting and fun, but the playing of it isn't. It's pretty I found it to be pretty rote. Like, the things you actually are doing mission to mission are similar to Grand Theft Auto. But the story and the fact that it's in a school and all that stuff is what makes it special.
I never played Bully because, ironically, when I was a school kid and I had my Sinclair Spectrum, I had two games, which are my favorite games on the system. One called School Days and the other one called Back to School, which was the sequel. And it was literally this school simulator, flat 2D.
Nothing sells to a kid like a school simulator.
No, but it was all done with this sort of like tongue-in-cheek sense of humor. And, you know, you could, if you skipped lessons, you'd have to avoid, you know, the teachers. Mm-hmm. Or you could sit in a lesson, pretend to learn, and if you wanted to get out of a lesson, you'd flick, you know, like a spitball at somebody. And, you know, if you're in the class with the class sneak, they would put their hands up and say, "Sir, I cannot tell a lie. It was little Billy who did it." And they'd shop you. And then you had also these things like, you know, get out of a certain thing, or go to the chem lab, pick up some chemicals to do stuff. And that was a great. There was two huge games. I mean, and the second one brought in the idea that this all boys school was now right next to an all girls school. So it had like this very basic dating thing in there as well, because you'd have to sneak off and find a girl to kiss and all that. And that was just like...
What game was that?
School Days, D-A-Z-E.
Of course, with the Z.
Back to School, which was B-A-C.
Did Back to School
have... That's number two.
Yeah, S-K-O-O.
Back to School have Rodney Dangerfield in it?
No. This was pre-Dangerfield. This would have been 84, 85 on the Spectrum. You can actually find it on emulator right now. And they also did one of the best L.A. Noir-style games called Contact Sam Cruise. It was a company called...
So, did that also have a Z in it?
I just want a game where I can do a triple Lindy.
I love that Rodney Dangerfield movie. But anyway, go back to Grand Theft Auto. And I am... really blown away that the footage we saw is apparently all from the PS3.
Dude, and running super smooth. And then how big is this game?
I hope it's that smooth.
How many games do I have to uninstall to get this to work on my local
system? Yeah, right. All of them.
Okay, all running super smooth. They've said that it is the combined size of all of their open world games together.
Do you think it's... And then you've safe got to
the
to
golf game. Do you see fucking golf? The golf game, it looks like...
Or tennis.
It's like,
do you think it's safe to assume the frame rate is indicative in the video is indicative of the actual game? Because I fear it is
safe?
Not.
Safe? I don't ever think it's safe because it's in development, and obviously most likely for video capture purposes that was taken off of DevStation.
Right.
So do I?
I fear that the game will not look that smooth.
The game launches 2 months from Tuesday.
Yes.
Game's finished.
Oh, it's well finished.
That video would have been captured from final build, no preview build. And yes, I'm sure there was some editing and shenanigans in there. If it isn't everything it was banged up to be, and you know it does have the jaggies and the chugging and the frame rate slowdowns, a lot of people are going to be upset. But I also think that, and I did make this point earlier to some other people, it seems that this, the last couple of months, we've started to see the culmination of the multi-cell processor that the PS3 mm-hmm. has, and people being
just
more,
in time.
But I mean, it's ironic that people are delivering and are obviously now comfortable enough with it that they are delivering these great experiences.
They still have to make it work on Xbox too.
I know they still have to.
I think that video more than anything was Rockstar saying, "We got this."
Well, they delivered, but. But yeah, honestly, do you think that, given how good some of the PS3 games have been, that people are getting to grips with it, and it's now only at the end of the life cycle you see that something, you know, the potential fulfilled? And let's face it, we have 2 months to wait until it's in our hands, and then we'll realize if it was all smoke and mirrors or not.
I'd still rather play it on PC. I just think it would be so great to just jack up all those settings and just make that thing run butter smooth. And
Brother Marcus, if you haven't, you should put Grand Theft Auto 4 on PC.
I don't know. I've got all of them. I bought San Andreas, Vice City, 3 and 4 on Steam sale. So I've got them all on my machine.
There's a summer, by the way. If you haven't played 4, you played 4 on 360 or whatever and got tired or whatever. Playing 4 on PC is pretty damn sweet.
Summer.
The only thing I didn't like about 4 was that Nico was just a blah hero.
I think that's a common complaint. I feel like that's a pretty common complaint.
And let me counter that. If you want a fun open world game that's already on PC, that's probably quite cheap, Sleeping Dogs.
It is good.
And PC, it was free. Really good. So I have that on my PS3 right now because I picked it up when it was free for Plus last month. And it's kind of been in my, like, okay, do I play that? I've got a bunch of, like, what do I play next games.
The solution to your problem of Blah Nico is Ballad of Gay Tony.
Yeah.
And Lost and Damned. Undamned, yeah.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
Or I can go back to playing the Saints Row 4 preview build.
Yeah, which you loved. And by the way, Zav last week was, like...
Down on it.
I adored it. I mean, the thing I like about Saints Row is that, you know, the first one came out and it felt like a GTA clone. It was like, look at us, we are copying. And then, ever since then, Volition have really been moving it so far off the reservation.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the culmination to me. And the preview build is, you know, it's the presidential thing at the beginning that we've all seen quite a few times. But then you go into the simulator. You know, you're captured, you're inside. I mean, it's a total rip-off of The Matrix. I mean, you know, I did read a preview.
Homage.
Yeah, no, I read a preview this week that actually nailed it up. Ben Cachera summed it up and said, Volition have literally stolen everything from every game that wasn't nailed down. And, you know, they've basically just put it in there to make it fun. And when you're bouncing around this simulation, and quite literally bouncing once you start, you know, hitting, you know, these data points and powering up, and you can basically jump a couple of stories. And
wait, I know the game you're describing.
Yeah.
It's Crackdown.
It's one of my favorites.
It is mine too. And I went back and started playing Crackdown a couple of weeks ago, and it hasn't stood the test of time.
No.
Oh, the engine's so bad.
Why is there not a new Crackdown being made? I think Crackdown 2 was a mistake because I think it went zombies.
You just answered your question.
But Microsoft said, was it Phil Spencer? Phil Spencer said, you know, I think he said last week that he's a huge fan of Crackdown 3 and we can expect it on Xbox One, which is a great thing for me. But no, this
full Kinect controls.
Don't spoil it. But yeah, this is, I mean, it's totally Crackdown. And it gets to the stage where you don't even need the vehicles anymore in just running around, powering up. But when you do get into the vehicles, there is a great vehicle, which is a Void, like spaceship, that you find on one of the towers. You have to convert from blue to red where you retake these towers. And, you know, you hop in the car, you hit N and you're in the simulation, and it just saves the vehicle. Whatever it is, you can call it back anytime you want.
That's awesome.
Doesn't need to be delivered. The frigging thing materializes around you. And then this Void ship has two flight modes, which is basically one nippy little fighter that, you know, you can basically just zip in and out of the skyscrapers, or you can basically stop it and it turns into a hovering machine of death. And so you basically hover it over.
You know why the F isn't in the of? Because it was killed by the machine of death.
But no, you hover over one of the hotspots where you have all these aliens congregating. You have to retake this particular node. And that's all you do is you hit F and you lower down and you start firing the missiles and the laser, you know, the laser cannons. And it's just an orgy of destruction that is so indecently fun that, I mean, you have to be dead in the soul not to appreciate this. And I know there's a lot of...
You just reminded me of this game that has been out of my memory for years, but it was a Stop the Alien Invasion.
Destroy All Humans?
Yes!
Oh, yeah,
yes.
I remember that game.
I mean, there was...
That was the name of it.
No, Destroy All Humans is You Are the Alien Invasion.
Right, you're right. It was the alien. You're right.
You levitate up sheep and shit.
You're right.
Yeah. But it's got that sense of humor. It does have, and that is the key thing. And people argue, oh, well, I can't have Grand Theft Auto and Saints Row. And I'm like, dude, they're basically...
Oh, they diverged.
Yeah, the apples and oranges.
I mean, and dildos.
Apples and huge purple. Yeah, and you know, Grand Theft Auto is a game I'm going to play and I'm going to enjoy because of what it delivers in that semi-serious-ish world.
More serious.
And then you look at Saints Row, and I made this analogy with Saints Row 3. I called it the Jersey Shore of video games because it's one of those guilty pleasures. Mm. And it's just a game. Volition basically are putting this game out there and say, just come dick around with us. This could be called dicking around the game and it would be perfect. And like I said, I mean, I've actually had to stop playing the preview build because I found out that my Steam achievements and saves won't carry over to the retail build. So I was like, that's it. I can't play anymore because I know I'm going to go in there and I'm going to spend 3 days in that thing.
Are you playing the PC version?
PC. Yeah.
Nice.
And the keyboard controls on PC really work well, especially, like I said, when you're flying that Void ship around. Great.
All right, so we got one more segment to go, which means I only have to keep Jeff from talking about Legacy, Rogue Legacy, for one more segment. That'll be his game this week that he says I can't talk about.
This is the last time you're going to hear from me for like 3 weeks, so I better get it in.
Off to Australia.
That's right.
Pretty exciting stuff. Those of you who backed Jeff's new show have the opportunity, of course, if you're in Australia, to go see him.
I thought you were going to say have paid for him to go to Australia.
Well, that too.
But you're going to be filming as well. You're going to be doing some stuff for the show, which will be awesome.
Yep.
You have some details of that going up someplace?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be filming the panel. We're going to be filming all kinds of stuff. It's going to be sort of like an American in Australia. American geek in Australia. What do I do? So it's going to be fun.
Drink and avoid the koalas.
All right.
All right. We will try and do that as well for the rest of the show. Come right back. We got Rogue Legacy. And then also I'm going to talk a little bit about Nier. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Tonight, I'm going to have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. Yeah. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So don't stop me now.
Ryan, that one was for you, buddy. Hope you're having a good time, too. So, if only you could be here in video to see Jeff going, can I talk about regular seat? Can I talk about regular seat? I don't know. Was anything else anyone else wanted to talk about?
Can we talk about Nintendo? And,
yes, let's talk about Nintendo. And
Evo?
Guys. Let him talk about Rogue Legacy. He's going to bust.
Rogue Legacy. Wasn't that one of those Star Wars games?
It was, I think.
Yeah, you know.
Rogue Squadron, you mean? No. Dude, it's a PC game. You like PC games?
I know, but
it's
I also
on Steam.
I also like dicking around with you, Captain America.
It was on Steam sale. I got it for 20% off.
You are so thrifty. Oh my God.
I am. I was only $11 instead of, or $12 instead of $15.
Yes, I like that. He says thrifty. I would have said tighter than a duck's ass.
Frugal?
Yes.
Okay, so you guys are aware of Rogue Legacy, right? Neither of you played it?
I'm completely aware of it. It's a Diablo-alike 2D side-scrolling.
Diablo? No.
Because you're
I thought it was more Castlevania-y.
It's if Castlevania and Ghosts and Goblins had a baby.
I thought it was like Ghosts and Goblins and Diablo had a baby.
Well, there is loot, kind of. Not really. There's gold.
Okay.
So it's Ghosts and Goblins and Castlevania had a baby, side scroller, crazy difficulty of Ghosts and Goblins. And it's got a little bullet hell action too, which is similar to Castlevania, where you know things are shooting out stuff and you're having to dive and enemies shoot at you, and it's that real slow bullet hell style bullets. Really hard 2D platformer. You're a knight going into a castle, exploring the castle, getting gold. You will die a lot, and every time you die, your progeny picks up where you left off. Your descendants pick up where you left off.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And every time...
But it's not as cool as you think, because there is no sort of like virtual sex to create these progeny. It's just...
No, that's imagined. There's a fanfic. But the all of the new... Your new generation, your descendants, will have new traits based on their birth.
And that is
And that's
cool.
The charm. That is cool. You then you can decide which of your descendants you're going to. Every time you die, you get like this chart of your family tree and little sort of portraits of each of them, and it gives you traits like maybe they're a dwarf, so they're half the size, and it'll say like, oh, they were never able to ride the roller coasters at you know, so maybe they're a dwarf, or maybe they're nearsighted. And if they're nearsighted, that means everything on the screen is normal except right near you, where it's blurry.
No.
Yeah.
They really actually...
Or maybe they're colorblind, and that means you're playing a black and white game that time.
Okay, this is actually super clever. This is very, very cool.
And it goes on and on and on like that. All these different character traits it just seems endless, the number of variations that they stack. Some of them are super helpful and make your guy awesome, like ADHD makes them run really fast because they're hyper. So they're like double speed, you know, so you're like selecting which character you want to play as based on these traits. So sometimes you get bonuses, sometimes you get things that aren't quite so good. Super clever. But even better than that is, so you die, you pick your descendant, that person starts entering the world. Whatever gold you manage to collect the last time around through the castle and forest and whatever level you were playing, is your descendant has. But to enter the game again, to enter the castle, the Grim Reaper will take all of your gold, all of it. So it is in your best interest to spend it before you re-enter the game. And what you can spend it on is awesome. Lots of cool upgrades. You're sort of building your castle, hiring new people to give you benefits, like a blacksmith who can, you know, create items for you. You have to find blueprints in the castle in order to. Or in
okay,
the
I'm seeing
dungeon.
Why Kohler was so into this, because Phil Kohler is the guy who I saw was so into. This is really quite clever.
Awesome.
Doesn't the castle, once you die, the insides of the castle resets every
it's
time.
It's procedurally generated, completely random every time, but you can upgrade your keep, your homestead, into having an architect who can, for a cost, will make sure it doesn't change.
Oh.
So the mapping that you did stays. All the enemies regenerate.
Dude, this game sounds really cool.
It is awesome.
You've totally sold it me on this awesome. Game in like less than 5 minutes. I'm very impressed.
I sat down to play it, and it was one of those game experiences that I love where I look up and 4 hours have gone by, and I can't believe it. I can't believe that I've been playing this long. It is awesome.
This might be sacrilege. Does it support controller?
Oh, that's what I was playing it on. That's okay. The only way to play it. It is a pure platformer, jump, avoid, manic. You're going to, I mean, I died so many times, but it makes dying fun because it's like, what am I going to get now?
It's like you're rolling the genetic dice.
You're rolling the genetic dice and that's the point at which you can spend all the loot that, or all the money that you got, and what you can spend it on is really cool. And then it becomes this thing of like trying to maximize what you buy so that you lose the least amount of money to the Grim Reaper on the re-entry. Because if you have if all the stuff that you've bought, you know, you have 100 gold and everything is more than 100 gold, you can't spend it. So you're going to lose it. So it's like, oh, crap. I have 500 gold. I can buy two things for 250, or I can buy one thing for 300 and lose 200.
You're like, F that, I'm buying the two things.
Exactly. It's so it's fun choices. It's got a sense of humor that's really clever. The actual playing of the game, you know, I'm not one of these people that loves beating my head against the wall with dying a million times. I'm not a super Meat Boy guy.
Yeah, no, me either.
N plus, you know, those types of games, I've played them and enjoyed them for short periods of time, but they don't suck me in like I've been sucked into Rogue Legacy, because the dying becomes part of the story and it becomes part of the upgrade process. And it's a blast, this game. It's super fun.
Because
it just
doesn't feel like a punishment at all.
Well, exactly. And part of the biggest reason for that is the fact that every time you enter that castle, it's different. And then it's like, well, you want it not to be different? You're going to have to give up 40% of the gold you acquire to the architect. He takes a cut.
Which is a lot.
Which is like, it's a lot, but it's like... Somehow they've convinced me that this thing I usually hate in games, which is like doing the same shit over and over, now is a benefit. Now it's like, oh no, I get to have the same level. I know what to expect. Like, I earned that rather than being forced to suffer through the same friggin' part where I died 12 times. It's like, now I want that. Now I'm like, oh my gosh. Now when I walk in, I know where to go, and I know where the teleporter is, et cetera, et cetera. It's brilliant.
So it's a roguelike.
It's called Rogue Legacy.
I mean, obviously, duh. But I mean, it takes its name very seriously.
Have you played it with keyboard and mouse at all, or just controller?
No, just controller. Yeah.
So now I'm starting to get like the whole piece put together. I don't know why I had Diablo in my head, but I guess from the loot and the.
Well, it's not really loot.
All the
it's
stuff
more like
you're buying.
You're getting gold, and you're trying to spend it wisely when you die. All the different genetic features and fun quirks, like sometimes you're a girl, sometimes you're a boy, sometimes you can't perceive 3D, so your guy only sees stuff feels like he's flat. Sometimes you're skinny, sometimes you're fat, sometimes you're tall.
But the ability to buy out the classic rogue game mechanic of you die, you start over,
right,
is really
makes that
it's really
feature.
Interesting.
Makes
it's
that
really interesting
the best
idea.
Part.
It's really
like,
yeah.
And I still, you know, there's still parts where I'm like, oh, I died, crap. But then it's like, oh, well, what do I get for that death? You know, it is. I'm totally addicted to this game. It is fantastic. Fantastic. It deserves all the praise it's getting. And it's only $15. I got it for $12 on sale.
Is it coming with you on the laptop to Australia?
I fear that might be.
Because you know,
actually,
you know Virgin have PowerPoints in the seats on the transatlantic and the Australian sides.
You just blew my mind, Marcus. That's happening. That's totally happening. Because it's the thing I didn't mention is that it's 16-bit-esque graphics, so it'll run on anything. And it'll likely run on my laptop, no problem. That's amazing.
You're welcome.
He's super happy now.
14 hours of flight, here I come.
How far will I get into this castle?
That's pretty brilliant.
That is pretty brilliant. So I finally played as much of Nier as I'm going to play, to the probable disappointment of those who have wanted me to play it.
Which is the end of Nier.
I finished it.
Right. So you want to have all the endings?
I only finished the first time through, and I started playing the second time through, and I get why the second time through is really cool. The actual combat mechanics of the game do not hold up well enough for me to soldier through even the limited amount it would take to play through the B ending, and I'm YouTubing the B ending stuff. I'm sorry for those of you who did disappoint. I played as much of the mechanic of the game as I want to, but I am drawn in. So if you haven't played Nier, Nier is this crazy, freaky game about. It starts off with it's another post-apocalyptic, but it's a really weird,
yeah,
like,
I wouldn't
sci-fi-ish
call it that,
post-apocalyptic yeah. thing. And you wind up inside this fantasy world where there are shades that are taking over the world. Basically, they tell you right off the bat that it's the end days of this place that you are inhabiting. And as the world is completely falling apart, there are all these shades that are roaming the world, and they are fighting the last remnants of humanity. And on it goes from there. And it's very difficult to talk about because you really can't say anything, because not only could you spoil the first playthrough, but knowing then what starts happening in the second playthrough, you could really spoil the spoiling. I mean, like, the whole thing's like, it's a really interesting it's a super cool high concept game that, especially as the years have passed, I don't think it was friendly when it came out, and especially in retrospect, the playing of it is not friendly now. And I think, you know, maybe you would like this. The mundane part of the action combat is you running around in a 3D environment with a sword or an axe or something and slicing up these shades, and they get really monotonous. It gets really monotonous and boring, and it's not very rewarding combat. The combat is pretty easy to get a mastery of and be pretty freaking successful at. Mm-hmm. And then that's punctuated by bosses. And the bosses in the game, initially I thought were going to be kind of neat. And then as they wore on, I found them to become increasingly tedious. And basically what they did, it's funny we were talking about bullet hell, is they took the idea of bullet hell avoidance and applied it in a 3D space. And it really doesn't work all that great. And it doesn't work all, and I don't know if it doesn't work all that great because it's not a good idea, or because the engine and especially the camera make it a pain in the ass in this game. But all of the bosses, you know, magic in this game, and this is the other thing, it is actually what I thought was mundane, is that all of the magic attacks in this game are giant red spheres that look like blood. And that's just it. It just like spits out these red spheres at you. Sometimes there are darker spheres that are do more damage to you. And then when you go up against these boss enemies, then they start spewing the typical sort of bullet hell stuff. Spirals and waves and spikes. And you are dodging them in 3D space so that you can get, you know. And basically they all boil down to you've got a repertoire of different magic attacks. And you figure out which one your enemy is vulnerable to. And then you play the dodge, 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 dodge until the opening. Launch your attack. Dodge, 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 dodge until the opening. Launch your attack. And this is why I just, with all the other things that I want to play and all of the things that are out there, I can't drag myself back through the full second half of the game for the B playthrough. So now with the mechanic piece out of the way, the game is really, really, really imaginatively cool. You played it, right, Jeff?
I did. It was the game that coined more fun than it is good.
And how much of it did you play?
Oh, I played a fair amount of it. I don't I didn't finish it.
You did? Oh, God.
I know, but...
I can't believe you didn't finish it, because this is a game that challenges you, especially after the ending, for what your perception of what's real and what isn't real is,
yeah.
And also of who's right and who's wrong, and what side are you actually fighting on.
That's cool.
And that, especially that second piece, really starts to get effed up as you see... So what they do in the second piece, I don't think this will be too much of a spoiler, what they do in the B side is that you start to see the events of the second half of the game where things really start to speed up through the eyes of one of your companions who also has a tie to the people you've been fighting. And so you suddenly see things in a whole other light, and you see other scenes that are taking place away from where you are that have meaning to what's happening. And it starts to paint this bigger picture of, you know, what you think is your perception of reality. I think one of the things that comes across is your perception of reality is inherently dictated by your point of view, just like history is written by the victors, that right. old expression. And I mean, it's a really poignant expression, right? Because history is written by the victors, and the people right. who lost, they had a completely different view of what happened in that situation. And what happens in Nier is that as you go through the B ending, you really get at that other side point of view.
That's
and
cool.
It's really powerful. And it's incredibly emotional and very powerful, and it should really be applauded and respected. I think that the game mechanically lets it down, but for everybody who recommended it to me, you did a great job recommending it. I completely enjoyed the game. It's really, it's weird. I mean, there are parts where this game gives you 20 minutes of reading page after page of text.
Right.
Because you're like inside. There's a part of this game that is a text adventure inside a 3D adventure role-playing game. You're like, holy shit, I just wound up in Zork. And they're literally you're literally taking, you know, a imagination walk as you're reading these pages of information, and then decisions that you make will determine whether or not you're successful at it. I'm like, wow, that's okay. That was not something I expected in my 3D modern PlayStation 3 era video game. Pretty off the wall. I would struggle to recommend it to someone right now. I really would.
That's a funny turn. Oh, it's so good. It really needs to be. Nah, I wouldn't. I don't think you should play it.
It's one who I'd if you are tickled by the fancy of how incredibly creative and imaginative and how it will challenge you. Like if you like quirky fiction, especially sci-fi and fantasy stories that blend together, and games that'll challenge, you know, what's the real world and what's not the real world and who's right and who's wrong, then absolutely give it a shot. Know going in that the action part of the game that holds it together will be thin. It will not hold you. It will not keep you satisfied. The mechanics of playing the game will not keep you satisfied nearly to what the end of where you'd want to go with the game are. But it's really another one of those caveat games with like super high concept and super high aspirations, and then, you know, just another one let down by its tech a little bit as well.
I've been playing Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Oh shit, me too. Did you bring your DS?
Fuck no.
Oh, fail.
Dude.
Fail.
What's the name of your city? That's the question I always ask everybody that tells me they're playing it. What's the name of your city?
Trout.
T-R-O-U-T?
Trout.
Boring.
Mine's Camelot.
Why is that boring? In Britain, if you call somebody a trout, it's an insult.
Oh, you're insulting your
citizens. So I'm insulting all the annoying little tow rags wandering around my city.
What fruits do you have?
Huh?
What fruits do you have?
I have bananas, peaches, the spiky
banana
ones,
peach, funk, pie.
The apples, the pears.
Friends codes.
Yeah, because I basically went to Daniel Bloodworth at Game Trailers. He messaged me to say he was online. I went to his place and robbed all his fruit and started planting them. So.
Dude, I need to get on this with you.
You go ahead. Help yourself to all the fruit, because I'm really quite annoyed that I played $34.99 for a friggin' Facebook game.
Oh, you don't like it?
You hater pants. Did you play the old ones?
No, I'd never played
Animal Crossing. Oh, so Crossing. You didn't know your... So
I never played Animal Crossing?
I didn't, but I also bought a new 3DS because my old one had given up the ghost.
Uh-huh.
I bought a brand new 3DS XL just to play Animal Crossing
because
I wanted to give it a try.
I want an XL too.
I gotta say, the XL is great.
I want
with
it.
The bigger screen and everything. It
doesn't hurt
nice
your hands to play it, which
no.
But it's made from man hands.
My problem with my... Big man hand.
Yeah.
My problem with Animal Crossing is I think just a lot of the mechanics are
simplistic.
they're simplistic, but they're also, you know, the control system and a way you access a lot of stuff is unnecessarily clunky. For example, you know, you have X amount of pockets to put stuff in, and then you have to start getting tools. So you get a fishing rod, and you get a shovel, and you get a watering can, and you get a net to catch butterflies. And if you want to
cicadas,
cicadas, yeah, they're all over the place right now. But if you want to change these things, you have to, you know, press the inventory button, you know, get your stylus, tap on the net to swap out for whatever you've already got. Whereas it just, and it's just having to do that over and over again. It, you know, could it have hurt Nintendo that much to have just a little set of icons down the side so I could instantly, you know, tap on a fishing rod, tap on, you know, it's like,
I agree with you. The counterpoint is that for folks like myself who've played a lot of Animal Crossings, we don't even think twice about that because we know exactly, like, we are button presses in. We know exactly where everything is. We know exactly how to work that. By the way, you know, you can quick access your gear off your D-pad, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you just tap.
Oh, because why? Because Animal Crossing New Leaf doesn't come with a bloody manual. Sorry. I mean, and that's the thing. I'm new to it.
You can tap on your D-pad and you can like cycle through like your net, your shovel, and
I didn't actually know that. Like I said,
I heard they're going to start doing all the manuals on Nintendo Direct.
They need to do something.
A video of them going. I mean, next up is our manual.
My counterpoint, Marcus, is that I fully admit to having had a huge addiction to this game in the past. I love it. It's better than before because they've added so many... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it might be because there is no manual. And as somebody who is new to this and is being dropped into this, I mean, I thank God that whenever I'm playing, I've got my phone next to me so I can open up a web browser, go to the Wikipedia page, and it's like, all right, so what's this dongloid? What's this, this seed thing?
Don't call me a dongloid.
I dig these things up, and I've got no information from the game as to what the hell they are.
But you see, you're approaching it as a gamer, and the beauty of Animal Crossing is that it's also just a game that you just want to go wander around and experience. It's don't feel pressured to build that stuff up.
No,
just go,
I want to know what it is.
Just go F around with it.
I'm sorry. I want to know, you know, if I've dug something up, is this cool or is it cool? What am I supposed to do with this?
Is it cool or isn't it cool is entirely up to you.
And so far, the only cool thing I've found is a green shell that looks like a Koopa shell from Super Mario Brothers. That's the only thing I've managed to find
from a lucky ticket, the fortune cookies.
Do I think that, you know, the online system is extremely convoluted? The fact that, you know, the gate has to be open or closed, I can't go, you know, visit anybody's town offline, is also very counterintuitive to bringing somebody into, you know, the game world who is an outsider. And I'm, you know, I've like Daniel Bloodworth, Jeremy Hoffman, Abby Happy. I mean, Abby has been, you know, I once gave Abby a, you know, a good, not a bollocking, but I wound her up and like took the piss out of her because I was at Vivendi and we had a gamers week and she was playing Animal Crossing during one of our demos. And it's like, you know, I mean, so I have access to these things, but I have to be online the same time as other people.
I obviously need even more friend codes. Clearly I'm behind.
My take on Animal Crossing is that it's basically chores the game.
it could be known as The Sims. I mean, it's The Sims with slightly less,
here's the thing
graphics.
For me, like the fun of this game is that like I'll get home from work and I'll sit down and I'll pop open my 3DS for like 20 or 30 minutes and I enjoy that. I will like, I'll run around my town, I'll harvest some fruit, I'll go fishing for a little while, I'll clean up some of the weeds that are around, I might go see what's for sale in the store.
Chores.
But
I enjoy all that, and then I go down and talk to my friends in the town.
And then you,
Aurora,
and then you,
Ariel's like, "Will you please just sweep up the leaves and take out the trash
in real life?"
I'm doing it in my little.
It's like that episode. There's that episode of The Simpsons where, you know, Marge wants Bart and Lisa to go and do some chores, and instead Homer takes them to an E3 version where they go right into virtual yard simulator. and that, like I said, that's my problem. I think there's other things that are there that a lot of people who've been fans of Animal Crossing and fans of Nintendo and everything that they have done over the years have sort of like got to the stage where they don't notice it. But as somebody who is new to this particular franchise,
I can see that. I could definitely see
and
that.
And somebody who is used to, you know, the Vita and, you know, Xbox and everything else, coming into this, there seem to be a lot of mechanics, like I said, online in particular, that are there more as barriers as opposed to encouraging people. It's like Nintendo still don't get the space.
But you know what? It's still also a little indicative of the difference between North America and Japan. Because if you were in Japan where the player density in an area is so much higher, even just doing ad hoc and you know, local and flipping on opening your gates, you'd have lots of people coming in and out. And you need to have, you know, they sort of need to have that control mechanism of you being able to close the gates, of you being able to turn off offline to get people out of your town that you don't want there, so that you have still that control over your space. And we just don't have that density, and we don't have that same, you know, we don't have that same inherent, like, this is a similarities there with like Monster Hunter of how rampant, you know, how into the game the group think pop, you know, the gamer grouping is in Japan versus like here people are into it, but we've got to swap codes and we're not all doing things at the same time. So it's like, wait, are you online or I'm not online? And the difference being that, like, if we had this critical mass of all being online, we wouldn't have to be checking back and forth.
So basically Nintendo are forcing everybody else to adhere to the rules of them catering to what is the third or fourth biggest games market in the world.
In this case, they are catering to their core market.
I mean, that is my problem. I think that is one of the reasons that we are looking and, you know, we're seeing all these people saying that, you know, Nintendo is going to die a death in the
and
console
street passing,
space.
Street passing, man. Street passing is huge in this game. And you know, it's much more difficult to do here. Well, but I mean, you know, there was a bunch of comments we didn't get to them this time. There was a bunch of stuff that came out this past week about, you know, Wii U and the challenges there. I mean, look,
man, reading some of this stuff is just unbelievable.
Miyamoto in a translated investor message said that when it comes to software development, when it comes to the scale of software development, Wii U with HD graphics requires about twice the human resources than before. Please allow me to explain that we may have underestimated the scale of this change, and as a result, the overall software... This part really gets confusing. The overall software development took more time than originally anticipated, just as we tried to polish the software at the completion phase of development. However, we are almost out of this phase, and we are trying to create something unique utilizing an easier development approach called Nintendo Web Framework, which we thought was just for apps, but apparently it's for Wii U games.
It will save us all, the web framework.
But basically, Nintendo is saying, yeah, we've been living in the past, and we're still trying to catch up.
It's crazy to me that they're like, it's been, what, 8 years of companies working in HD, and they're like, yeah, we didn't talk to any of those guys.
Well,
we didn't know about that.
Nintendo was still in like 2003. They've only just managed to get into the century, and this goes back to the conversation of you know, catering to their home base and not, you know, basically being very short-sighted.
Have you heard about this HD stuff? Because it is crazy,
dude,
crazy high def.
You know what else is cool? The internet.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a framework now. There's a framework Nintendo
well,
have.
That's just a fancy name for
and
the web.
And Yves
the bigger stuff
threw them under the bus too with his thing about
Zombie
U.
Well, Peter Moore really threw them under the bus. Guillemot said basically just that Zombie U, which we all thought, I mean, we know that's one of the most popular games for launch, was like not just not successful, but that it wasn't even close.
No, it's not that it wasn't successful. It wasn't profitable.
No,
not
wasn't
even close.
Yeah, it wasn't close. So there's no sequel.
Yeah, and its failure resulted in Rayman Legends going multi-platform.
It makes sense.
Well, then look at what
so
look at Peter Moore's stuff.
So one of the biggest launch games was not even close to profitable.
It's a problem.
Well, I mean, again, this goes back to, you know, you look at Nintendo and how much third-party advertising support do they do? Microsoft, Sony, you see lots of ads for third-party games where they'll push them out and they'll do the co-buys. But how much, what does Nintendo advertise? Nintendo advertises its own games,
yeah,
and people are getting sick of it.
And that quote from Peter Moore, that the lack of online engagement on the Wii U, it says, they're so small, it's hardly worth running the servers. That's a fucked up sentence to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, keep in mind that as fucked up as you think that is, EA is out of the Wii U game, period. Yeah. Their new engines, both you know, Frostbite and the sports engine, do not run on
Insight.
Wii U.
Insight?
Infinity.
No, it's It's Insight, isn't it? Infinity is the Disney.
Okay. Maybe it is. Whatever.
Incontinence.
It has a buzzword. Whatever their buzzword name for their, you know, if we'd written it down, we'd have it. But neither of their engines work. They're not making any Wii U games. Like, look, EA, big, massive North, you know, Western publisher, we're not making Wii U games. Ubisoft, there's a real problem there. And they Guillemot didn't go as far as saying we're not making them, but they're obviously multi-platforming them. So yeah, Wii U does have.
And Ubisoft was big right out there when the Wii U launched. They were like, this is, we're partners, we're doing it, Wii U, we believe in it. And it's like, oh yeah, well,
and then
bam, tanked.
Turn the page and look how freaking awesome Pikmin 3 looks.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like you said, Marcus, I think advertising is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we've known for so long that Nintendo hasn't cultivated its third-party relationships, but it's really coming home to roost.
Yeah, they took them for granted. They basically got the stage that the Wii was selling so much, so many units, and that there were so many games that it's like, all right, well, you know, put this out, put that out, and there was so much garbage coming out, so much shovelware towards the end of the life of the Wii, and it was still selling in the buttload, because you'd have fitness simulator, ice cream eater, whatever, because people were still enamored with, you know, the wand waving. But now it's got to the stage that the boot is on the other foot, and let's face it, the only 3DS games that sell are the ones from Nintendo, because they will push them and push them and push them.
But they're also really good. I mean, again, let's not overlook. That's debatable. Like I said, Pikmin 3 is an amazingly awesome looking game. Pikmin 3 looks freaking. I cannot wait to play this game.
What they should have got on the DS, 3DS, is fucking Minecraft. If they had gotten that on the 3DS, that would have been.
Could you imagine Notch wanting to develop for the 3D or trying to develop for the 3DS?
Well, all right, ifs and buts, candy and nuts, as they say. How about we do some finishing moves?
Finishing moves.
Jeff Cannata.
Well, haters rejoice. It's the last time you'll have to hear me for several weeks.
Now, don't say that.
I'm
we
off
love you,
to
brother.
Australia. I'm excited about it. Very excited about it.
We're gonna miss you.
I will miss you, honestly. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. I will miss all of you, and I will. Hopefully, you guys are following me on Twitter. Hopefully, I'll find internet in Australia.
Apparently,
I think they have it there.
Obscenely very expensive at hotels. Yeah.
I looked into my hotel, and I was like, "Oh, what now? What now?"
Yeah.
But anyway, so hopefully, there'll be lots.
Like how bad?
Like $30-$40
a day.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Anywho, but what I really want to talk about is another game that I've been playing that literally, if Rogue Legacy hadn't come along, I'd still be playing because it's that addictive. And it is Civilization V's new expansion, Brave New World. Oh, I love Civ. I love Civ 5. And these expansions have come out and really just expanded and supported building in new systems. The most exciting stuff with Brave New World for me is the culture stuff that they've used to supplant.
It really gives the compliment to the military side.
Yes, exactly. Because now you're trade routes is awesome. Trade routes is awesome, and planning your trade routes and figuring out how you're going to do trade with other. It's really cool, and it allows you to sort of like inject religion and science into other cultures. It's really interesting. But the coolest part for me is that your great persons or whatever it is now actually do stuff. Like musicians will go on tour or write great works of art. Painters will create great works of art and put them in museums, and they'll do so in other people's civilization. So you're literally attacking other civilizations with culture.
Oh, wow.
It's so rad. And it just makes a great game even greater. And I couldn't recommend it higher.
You're going to be sad because I'm going to be playing it while you're gone.
Yeah. Well, I hope you talk about it because
I'm sure I will be talking about it.
Did you get to the stage where you can introduce reality television?
Yeah. Yeah. And then your cultural victory goes.
And Pit Boss is back. I've always been curious about Pit
Boss. Just that sort of asynchronous play by email version.
So I wonder, like I said, I wonder how many people actually finish Pit Boss games. But that's a conversation for another day. Marcus Beer.
Well, I've actually been. I went for blast for the past as we said at the top of the show, and I don't want to drain the energy. The last 3 or 4 days have been particularly rough, and I just escaped back into New Vegas. And I got to say, if you haven't played Fallout New Vegas, or if you played it only on the console, if you can get it, you know, it's probably going to pop up in the Steam sale at one point. There's a game to get with all the expansions at an expensive price, because it's been patched and it's phenomenally solid. And it's a game that's well worth going back to, because originally I hated it because it was so buggy and, you know, I couldn't really get into the story because of all the glitches and the crashing. And now that it's fixed, I've got to take my hat off to Obsidian, who've created a really, really good world. And, you know, playing some of the expansions as well, the Sierra Madre one in particular, which is ironic because I live about a mile and a half away from a town called Sierra Madre now. No treasure, though. But yes, I'm playing that and just going back in that world. That world has sort of like really helped me escape from the real world this week. And I got to say, you know, that's what games do. And that's why I like, you know, and to go back to the conversation we had earlier, that's why I'm happy that we don't have photorealism, because I like being in the game world. I like knowing it's a game and appreciating the advancements in the graphics to a certain degree. But I think if you get to the photorealistic stage and the holodeck stage, it stops becoming a game and starts becoming Animal Crossing. I mean, it's those sort of chores. But I mean,
there's one thing, you know, I think about Animal Crossing, it's photorealism.
No, but you know what I mean. It's that, like I said, it's that. I like the fact that I know I'm playing a game, and this week I've needed to play games. And for, you know, ironically, Oculus Rift and Fallout New Vegas, that would be a match made in heaven.
Ooh.
Well, yeah, I had other things, but now I think about it, and I think there's only one appropriate way to finish things. And we'll talk, you know, a little bit of bringing to close a really difficult week for us in the industry. And it's been really heartwarming in a way to see, you know, Jeff and I both wear our hearts on our sleeves. And when we read the internet, a lot of times it really gets to us when people are tough on us. And I think that happens in all communities. And yet there wasn't a single, everyone really came together around Ryan's passing. And it was extremely heartwarming to see that. It was really great to see you guys do that. And I think Ryan would really feel fantastic about that. And that's really all I have to say, I guess. I really sorry before I get broken up.
I hope that feeling can
continue.
Yes.
And please pay attention to Giant Bomb. I talked to Patrick briefly right before the show. They're going to be doing something that I guess I probably be known by now. They're going to be doing some Ryan t-shirts that they're going to be selling, and the proceeds of those are all going to be going to the family. And that would be a really nice way to remember a really awesome guy, just like we're remembering him now. So thank you, Ryan. Really appreciate it.
I think it would be awesome. Like you said, as long may this continue.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's a very long time before we all go through something like this again.
Agreed.
To have that outpouring again. I mean, we're going into new console launches and the console wars. And let's face it, it's all inconsequential at the end of the day. This is a hobby we all love. Mm-hmm. Some of us are lucky enough to call it a profession. And we, you know, myself included, I mean, look, I do annoy gamer and I'm continually bitching about things that I don't like in games. But that comes from a love of this amazing industry and the fact that we are all very close-knit and we've all worked together for 10, 15, 20 years in some cases. And, you know, just it's only a game, but it's what binds us together.
Thanks for sticking with us, folks. That's all. That's your weekend confirmed. And until next week, we are Ghost. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.